going to go very, very quickly through the slides that I delivered at Liberation Technology Conference. David Solomonoff, the president of the New York thing. That's great, Greg. Thank you. Everybody who's here in an hour gets a book. I just want to just show these slides now. You all know tinyurls, /tinyurl, OSE-2014. OSE-2014. That stands for Open Source Everything 2014 with a hyphen. You can find the actual superior videotape of my delivery of the Open Source Everything Manifesto lecture at Liberation Technology. So I'm just gonna show you these slides real quick. And here you can see the tiny URL down at the bottom, OSE-2014. This is the book. I'm sorry, it's the only book that I sold my soul for to put it in the bookstores, so I don't own it. It is available on Pirate Bay, but when I went to get it, I got all kinds of virus shit. And so if someone can give me a clean copy of my own book, I'll post it at my website for people to download, because all my other books are free online. Never been about money. So I went through key negative trends, key positive trends, revolution simplified. This is the revolution. In 1976, I did my first graduate thesis on predicting revolution, and it's still looking very, very good. And here in red are all of the preconditions of revolution that exist in the United States today, as well as the United Kingdom. And so shock people that I think it will break the back of the dynamic in which people are very tolerant of the elites getting away with, quite literally, abuse and murder. A few complicated slides. This is the Open Source Everything slide. This came to me directly from God after he finished talking to George Bush. And I like it. And OpenBTS is there. I've been familiar with OpenBTS for a long time. I'm a fan of David Weinberger and Open Spectrum. And the bottom line is we need all of the opens together as an ecology. We cannot do one open alone. I mean, when ESRI talks about open data, they're saying, give us all your data. We want to fuck you with our proprietary software. Okay. So you have to have open source software, open source hardware, open spectrum, open cloud, the whole bit. And this is the design that we did. This is my geek slide. You can go get it. This is actually Robert Garrigue. I want to honor Robert Garrigue. He died in a hotel room alone. At about the age of 51. He was an extremely fit person. I still don't know why he died, but he died way too young. He was one of the very first people to really understand that security is about trust. It's not about control. And I tried sharing this slide with the guy that replaced Keith Alexander, and he just doesn't get it. The red side is the top-down hierarchical control asshole approach to security. The green side is what we should be doing. And I credit all of these ideas to Robert Garrigue. I stand on the shoulders of others. Some of you know I read a lot. 98 categories listed at Phi Beta Iota under the book page. And these are some of the lists that I put together. And two books in particular that have really impressed me this past few years are Governing the Commons, which the lady got a Nobel Prize for demonstrating that essentially hybrid governance and governance in which the people themselves are developing the rules and also doing the monitoring and the policing, like in fisheries. If everyone who is doing the fishing is part of the rulemaking and part of the enforcement, it works. On the other hand, if you have hired thugs from Blackwater, it doesn't work. Okay? And then Stop Thief. I really, really believe that the commons is a concept that has to come to cyberspace. And I've heard a lot of that this time around. Open spectrum is, in fact, the territorial integrity of the people. It cannot and should not be owned. This is my favorite slide. It took me 25 years to get to this slide. And you can go get the brief to figure it out later. This is what I want to build. If anyone has $100 million, I'll give you my email. But essentially, we're fucked. I mean, it's not just the U.S. government that's hosed. It's New York University. and Columbia University and Harvard and all of these people. They're all stovepipe. They're all talking out their ass. And none of them are really sharing information or making sense. How many people know about citation analysis, citation analytics? All right. Well, as a freshman in college, I knew more about citation analytics than the vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council 20 years later. This is not something academics do, and they should. Citation analytics means you use the social science citation index or the science citation index to find out who the fuck is writing serious stuff. And that's based on citations. And so you create a list of the top 100 people in your field or domain, and then you start following that out to the other disciplines. And then you interview those people to get to who are the top people that are not publishing. And that's how you actually get to a grasp of ground truth. Well, our intelligence community doesn't do that. They talk to whatever 14 assholes have clearances and are being made available by SAIC, which is a prescription for instant stupidity. So what I want to build is a school of future-oriented hybrid governance. There are 8 tribes, 8 information networks, academic, civil society, government, commerce, government, law enforcement, media, military, non-government, nonprofit. And I want to build the World Brain Institute, and these are the 4 things. I own 3 of these 4 URLs. I don't have .edu yet. And I want to build a global serious game. Medard Gabel, who was the co-creator with Buckminster Fuller of the Analog World Game, I paid for him to build the architecture back when I was a minor millionaire. I paid for him, which I'm not anymore. I'm selling these pins for $10 each if anyone wants to support me getting back home. But I paid for him to design the architecture. And for under $5 million a year, we can create the world brain. The global game, the piece that actually has true cost economics and all of the actual feedback loops and relationships between things like water. We all know Keith Alexander is an evil person, but he's also much stupider than you might realize. The NSA Center in Utah, which is a water-starved state, requires 1.7 million gallons of clean water every single fucking day to cool. Okay, what kind of moron puts a supercomputer center in a water-starved state? Okay, so these are the kinds of things that true cost economics helps you think about, and you have to actually take it into serious consideration. That's some real estate I want. The United Nations has lots of problems, but this is the big picture. And that's the end of the slideshow. So, who has a question? Yes, sir. Oh, God. Damn, we have a genius in the crowd. Thank you. I'm honored by your interest.
Can you say something about open news versus corporate-owned news agencies?
Why is there feedback on that thing? Say something about open news as opposed to corporate Robert Murdoch or Rupert Murdoch. Okay. I got into open source intelligence when I created the Marine Corps Intelligence Command. I was a senior civilian, and I spent $20 million on access to top secret everything. And then I had, this was 1988 now, so I had one little PC with access to the source. Okay, back in 88. And inside of a week, my analysts started lining up for that. And I said, what on earth are you doing? And they said, there's nothing in a secret database about Haiti, Burundi, Somalia, or whatever. Okay? So one of the problems we have with the secret system is it is very narrowly focused. And it's based on secret sources and methods that are like a Cadillac running on a superhighway between Moscow and Washington, D.C., it's not adaptable. So you can't turn a Cadillac on a superhighway into 10 Jeeps, 100 motorcycles, 1,000 bicycles, and 15 million pedestrians, which is what you actually need to do open source. Now, the difference between news and intelligence, or data, information, and intelligence is very important. I mean, data is the raw datum. Information is that stuff which is broadcast, and information is like an artwork. It has a provenance. I mean, if it's from the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, it's 50% shit, okay? I mean, these people still think that Abdullah in Afghanistan is half Pashtun. And the New York Times lawyers are so fucking stupid that they wouldn't actually go do the research in Afghanistan where I was, where I read his bio translated in Dari. He is 100% Tajik. It is not possible for him to win a national election. What we have just seen in Afghanistan is a major covert action trying to throw Ghani under the bus in order to cut a deal with Iran on a nuclear arrangement, which Iran has now written off, okay? Ghani won the election, 60-40, but there has been a major covert action in which the U.S. and Iran had a coincidence of interest in having Abdullah fraudulently win that election. So intelligence is when you move past news and you get to answers to a specific question, such as who actually won this election. Now, to get to that, we had to do polling. The State Department canceled all of its polls in Afghanistan because they knew that the polls would show that Abdullah was being elected fraudulently. And so someone else came in and ran polls, and we popped that bubble. I'm very proud of having been part of popping the bubble on trying to fraudulently elect Abdullah, because that would have led to Iranian control of the wealth in the north and the west, and it would have led to Pakistan oversight over a divided Pashtun tribe, which is all about protecting the Durand Line, which is a British imposition. Dividing tribes is not a good idea, okay? It causes issues. So data, information, and then intelligence. Now, anybody can do intelligence. My second book, and there are copies in those boxes back there. And by the way, my intent is that anyone who wants a book, take it. In fact, take five or six. And if you can sell them, that's great. And if you want to send me 50% as a contribution to Earth Intelligence Network, thank you. But there's no obligation. All right? So my hope is the books will vanish, and at least half of you will be guilted into contributing $5 to $10. Okay? This is my gift-guilt economy model. All right? I don't know. You know, I mean, I come here. I get more value from you guys than I give. I mean, I love coming here. This is, for me, is a refreshing break from lying assholes. I really, truly thrive in this environment. But coming back to intelligence, which none of the media do, none of the think tanks do, none of the governments do, intelligence is applying the proven process of intelligence, which is requirements definition. What do you need to know? Collection management. Who knows? Source discovery and validation. Multi-source fusion. Multidisciplinary analytics, including true cost economics. All right? And then finally, presenting an actionable answer. All right? If the Department of Defense were using intelligence correctly, we would be able to both cut the budget of the Department of Defense by 30%, because it's documented at being between 35 and 55% waste, and build a 450-ship Navy, a long-haul Air Force, an air mobile army, and pull back all the overseas bases. Okay? This is just common sense based on intelligence being applied. So the difference between what I want to do and what everybody else is doing is that nobody else is doing intelligence. Nobody else is applying this process. And it's a process that not only anybody can do, it's a process that everybody has to do together. The next question.
A two-part question. I know I saw you in the front row this afternoon at Edward Snowden's talk. I just wanted to get your take on what you feel about Edward Snowden and what you felt about his talk. Are you familiar?
Great question.
And okay, then I'll do that, and I'll ask my second question.
Okay. When Snowden first came out, I thought he had been recruited by the Chinese in order to kick Obama in the balls right before his meeting with Xi. Okay. Hawaii is owned by the Chinese. I mean, they do wonderful intelligence operations across Hawaii, which, by the way, I expect will secede from the Union at some point. Hawaii is a sovereign kingdom. It's already, the groundwork has been laid in Congress. It's in the congressional record. We have officially acknowledged and apologized for invading Hawaii and violating its sovereignty. But basically, Hawaii is a Chinese happy hunting ground. And Snowden, at the beginning appeared to me, and I'm going to come to a very happy ending here, so bear with me. So I've gone through these things, and meeting Snowden's parents had a big impression, made a big impression on me. So at the beginning, I thought Snowden was a Chinese op. Then it began to look like it was actually a CIA operation to take down... What's that?
Wasn't he CIA
to begin with? Look, first off, everything about Snowden's career has been sketchy to the max, okay? And you got to remember that Booz Allen is Mike McConnell and Joan Dempsey and a couple of other key people, okay? And so there was some rumors going around my circuit of retired CIA people that Snowden was, in fact, that NSA had gone one blackmail too far and that Snowden was a CIA operation to take down NSA. And I don't know what the facts are. I mean, I love it if it's true. And there's just enough there. I'm absolutely certain that NSA has not just been violating the Constitution. They have been doing insider trading. They have been doing blackmail. They have been doing a lot of really evil things, including subsidizing foreign intelligence services, spying on their own citizens. And by the way, NSA doesn't have a legislative charter. It's just an administrative agency of the executive. Congress can take it out anytime it wants. So that was the second impression. But then as I have watched Snowden over time, I've been increasingly impressed by the maturity and the consistency of his presentation. And watching today, I was saying to myself, this guy has gone to a whole new level. I mean, he is now a world figure with a coherent narrative that is clearly resonating with people around the world. And there's no arguing with that. And I think Daniel Ellsberg also did an excellent job of making the point that most of these secrecy agreements are administrative agreements. They're not criminal, legal kind of things where you can actually be sent to jail. Now, the fact is we put people in jail all the time without a legal basis. Susan Lindenauer was put into jail for a year. She's written a great book on extreme prejudice. And I think the only thing that got her out of it, and they were trying to drug her the whole time that she was there, was that Andy Card was a cousin. But we disappear people all the time. And it's a very frightening thing. The fact is there is no defense against a government that's out of control. Now, I met Snowden's father asked to meet me. Otherwise, I would never have gotten close to him. And we had a really good talk, and it turned out he is just like me in terms of being a patriotic veteran who has served his country, who believes in the Republic and the Constitution, who is seriously concerned about an out-of-control government. And from meeting Snowden's parents, that took me – if I started with Snowden at 50% and have gradually made it up to 80%, that took me to 90%. There are still questions in my mind as to whether or not Snowden is, in fact, a Booz Allen-run operation on behalf of the CIA. If so, more power to them. Because I think NSA is long overdue for takedown, but so is CIA. I mean, CIA, I've written a post on seven CIAs. CIA's rendition and torture and drones that have a 98% error rate, which is collateral damage, killing people that have nothing to do, and we create 100 terrorists for every one that we kill. So I'm not happy with the totality of our secret intelligence world. Now, your second question.
Are you familiar with Fred Russman, the ex-CIA?
No.
Any opinion on his allegations that...
I have no idea who he is. What are his allegations?
He's allegedly an ex-CIA operative, and his allegations are that Snowden is a double agent. It seems ridiculous to me.
Double agent for who? For what?
I don't know, but for the CIA. To take that, to kind of put a finger in the eye of the NSA.
Well, that's what I just finished saying.
Right, I know, but it seems ridiculous to me, but I'm just curious if you know who
I have no idea who that guy is.
Okay.
I am telling you that in the world that I lived in, Snowden would never in a million years have qualified for the jobs that he got overseas. Okay? No fucking way. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that he was, in fact, groomed for a role. And I think it's quite remarkable. This may well be one of the coolest things CIA has ever done.
Amazing PR.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. But, you know, and I don't know. But the bottom line, look, the bottom line for me is I'm high on Snowden. In fact, I thought about a publicity line because I do interviews every once in a while. Given a choice between Hayden and Alexander and Snowden, I would shoot the two generals and promote Snowden. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
So just to your comment about Snowden wouldn't qualify when you would have qualified for the positions he had. You being out of that world for a while, what do you think the difference is now between who?
You're allowed to smoke marijuana.
But beyond that, like...
This is very important. Where are your priorities?
The
FBI wants to be nice to you guys. I think that's an extraordinary cultural evolution for the FBI. But go on.
Doesn't it seem like there's maybe more to it about why... or who they recruit now versus before.
Well, you know, I did a tour in the Office of Information Technology at CIA, and I'm glad you've asked the question because the qualifications have been changing. When we went nuts on counterterrorism, we were giving away GS-15 positions to guys whose only qualification was that they spoke fluent Arabic with no college degrees and no real-world experience except for this and that. And so the system has a huge problem. First off, 70% of the secret world's money is spent on contractors. And one of the problems that we have with contractors is that they win contracts based on lies and then they field unqualified people. And that really hoses the system. Now, the other problem we have is that within the government, we've forgotten how to write a statement of work. And we've forgotten how to write a technical evaluation plan. And so we end up letting the contractors write the statement of work and the technical evaluation plan. Of course, the contractors, and I've said this before, they're going to write a plan which says you need more of what we can't sell to anyone else. Okay? And the government says, yeah, sounds good. I'll get promoted because it means I'm spending more money and I've got more positions under oversight and so forth. Now, coming back to qualifications, I opened this conference in 1994. I was the first speaker. And not because I was important, but because Wynne Schwartzau told Emmanuel I looked good in a suit with sunglasses. And so I was up in a downstairs room, and sunglasses and spotlights and Jell-O Biafra. And I swear to God, we had no idea that in talking about George Orwell there, we were scratching barely 10% of what we have today. We had no idea how bad it was going to get. But coming back to qualifications, and then I'll take your question. One of the problems with the entire system is that the schools are teaching old shit that's useless. And you guys are the lifeboat. And I'm sorry I don't have more younger people, although there's one here. He stand up. This guy is about to go to Penn State, and I was paying attention to him when he was 16 years old. Because he's got a huge brain. Dennis, what's your last name? Okay, please be nice to him. Okay? Teach him shit. Because I think he is all right. That's it. I'm sorry to embarrass you, but I think they need to know that you're here. Okay? You guys are like my third generation of hackers. Two hackers ago, I had all the hackers with the babies in their arms. You know, and it was so cool. So we're coming over and over again. But on qualifications... one of the things that is really, really bad is the system is collapsing. And the system is collapsing because we're hiring people who are building more of the wrong shit more expensively. And you saw my technical thing from Robert Garrigue. And so I think it's taken me 25 years to appreciate the wisdom of Buckminster Fuller and Russell Acuff. Fuller said, don't try and repair the system. Displace it. And Russell Acuff said, stop doing the wrong things, writer, and do the right thing instead. And so when I moved to open source everything, I mean, for me, that was a decisive shift. And I believe the time has come now for us to not accept proprietary software or hardware, period. And we need to move to a self-healing system that is an ecology that is affordable, interoperable, and sustainable, and that is geospatially rooted. In 1988, I told the General Defense Intelligence Program that if you don't have geospatial attributes on every single datum, you will never, ever get to machine speed processing. Okay, you have to have geospatial attributes, not just time and date groups. And it went in one ear and out the other. Keith Hall was two seats down from me, the NRO guy. Good guy. All right, sir, ask me a question.
Well, essentially the question is, the whole paradigm is rigged, and we all know from 9/11, there's just, the whole thing is a lie. So when are the criminals, the Obamas, the Cheneys, the Bushes, the Clintons, all of them going to be taken down? Because more and more, all we find is just, and what we're dealing with, we look at Tesla and we look at Buckminster Fuller and all these great, amazing scientists who have these great ideas.
And
what
we criminalize those.
Yeah, we criminalize that because there is a criminal mafia. We have a criminal government that runs this world and the Federal Reserve, and we're all just trying to do little things. It's like trying to kill the cockroach, but you're throwing rocks, and the cockroach creates 215 new eggs every 10 days. You can't kill it. We need to just completely break out of the paradigm. So my question is, when do we say, F this world, start the new world, and get rid of the criminals, because that's what's killing us?
Well,
thank you.
All right. Number one, in revolutions, you have preconditions and precipitants. And we've got all the preconditions. And Matt Taibbi's book, Griftopia, is a great book. And if I mention a book, I've reviewed it. And if I've reviewed it, I've written a summary of it, so you don't have to buy the book. Just go find my summary and read it. And there's a quote on page 32, which talks about how over the last decade or so, Wall Street and government have become a blended criminal co-conspiracy. Rubin and Clinton have done more damage to this country than George Bush has, because they basically empowered the Wall Street Mafia to take down the U.S. government, the U.S. economy, the Greek economy, the Spanish economy, so forth. And in all of this time, only Iceland has had the intelligence and the integrity to recover from this by immediately prosecuting the criminals and going after them. Now, there's a truth and reconciliation aspect to my being. First off, these people have an awful lot of power right now. But the day is going to come when I think we'll have a general strike. Occupy was a huge disappointment to me. I've never liked kumbaya circles to begin with, but kumbaya circles with wiggly fingers is just too much for me. And Occupy had a chance to take electoral reform, which is the one thing everybody can agree on. I ran for president in 2012 just for 6 weeks. I was unemployed. It seemed like a good thing to do. And I actually put together a website, bigbatusa.org, where I put the best ideas from everybody together, including an automated payment transaction tax and electoral reform. And the reason I ran for president was primarily so that I could, as a presidential candidate, registered with the FCC or whatever they're called, I could write to all the other presidential candidates, including Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich. And I have to tell you, I'm ashamed of every single one of them. The only one that actually engaged in dialogue was Rocky Anderson. All the others are in their own ego trip. All the others are on their own narrow little path for being top libertarian or top green or whatever. Not a single one of them wanted to come together to create a national coalition for electoral reform, which is the one thing that we could absolutely make happen if we occupied the home offices of every senator and every representative, and we basically made it clear that until they passed the 11-point Electoral Reform Act, they were toast. So we're waiting for a precipitant, like our Tunisian fruit seller, all right? And the reason I've mentioned pedophilia is because obviously 9/11 wasn't enough. Not the whole world. The 20% of the world that pays attention knows that 9/11, we got warnings from 13 countries in advance. Well, yeah. You don't have to poke him. It's okay. look, at Phi Beta Iota, how many of you know that there's a PhiBetaIota.net? Okay, wow. I've got a blog called PhiBetaIota.net, the public intelligence blog. You can subscribe to it for free. We used to post 15 items a day. Now we post three to four. And if you look there for Mini-Me Convergence 9/11, you'll get the best summary I was able to get from Richard Gage and other people, and key points of contention. I mean, it's never been investigated properly. It's just like the Warren Commission on JFK. What we have here, are you smiling? Yeah, okay. She reached over and went, boom. I think what's going to happen is we're going to opt out. And there are going to be more and more nullifications by states. And for example, New York State has essentially nullified fracking town by town. That is a wonderful accomplishment. Okay, and I'm afraid that they're going to get overruled by the appeals court, but that's what it should be. That's what it should be. It should be a bottom-up opt-out of the system. And the reason I think there are states that are going to secede is because the federal government has become criminally insane and ineffective. Good people trapped in a bad system. If I had to do my life over again, I'd probably move to Maine or Vermont and start one town at a time. But I've got another 20 years in me, and in fact, I was just asked to design an open source everything hub for London, and God willing, that may keep me busy for the next 20 years. And my intent is to actually create an open source everything hub that gives away this open source for everything, including there's a really cool open source car that they're asking $25,000 for, which is about the price of a good MGB. 1964, but I like the concept and the whole open source construction village. You know, I mean, I could move a million Somalis and give them housing, water, sewage, internet, power for $500 a person. Okay, because they're using dirt to make their own houses, and then they've got the compost, distributed sewage, and they're capturing water, they're getting water with the solar. I mean, in Somalia, you've got lots of dirt, sun, and seawater. So there's some very clever things you can do. So short answer for me is I think we're going to see a resurgence of bottom-up, not in my neighborhood. And that'll be a good thing, and I hope it spreads like oil spots. And the other thing is I want to really stress truth and reconciliation. There's no point in putting the Bush and Clinton and Obama families in jail. Even if we confiscate all their money, it doesn't do us any good. What we have to do is create infinite wealth. And there are a number of really good books on this point. Barry Carter wrote a book, Infinite Wealth. My friend Alvin Toffler has written both Power Shift and Revolutionary Wealth. You've got Yochai Benkler's Wealth of Networks. You've got Thomas Stewart, A Wealth of Knowledge. Okay, we're at a point in which all this money that the Koch brothers has, I mean, the Koch brothers are making $3 million a year, $3 million an hour in compound interest. That's all fake. That's all because somebody said, I'm going to allow you to pretend to make $3 million an hour with this. Well, okay, and so where you end up going back is you end up repossessing the land and the spectrum. I don't believe in absentee landlords. I think villages and communities need to take back ownership. And in France, for example, you can lease land, and as long as you or a relative is resident on it, you own that land, but you're not allowed to harm that land. And so I think there's innovations that we can make, and I don't have all the answers, but I don't think the answer lies in burning them to the ground. I think the answer lies in creating peaceful, nonviolent alternatives where they end up having to come to us for food. So another question. Yes, sir.
Firstly, I want to say I'm shocked at what you're saying right now in a very positive way.
What were you expecting me to say? I want to recruit all you assholes. I'll give you $1,000 a month to betray your neighborhood.
No, well, firstly, open source ecology was what you were referring to, building your own village, open source ecology, and Wikispeed is the car manufacturer that you were referring to, I believe. So those are, you can check those out. Those are awesome. I wanted to know, I stand behind you 110% in building the positive solutions to change the world for the better. I completely agree that we needn't throw people in jail. If we can build the solutions, they'll come to us. We just need to work together, ground up, all of that. And I'm doing that myself, open source, financing, and so on. But I wanted to know, you're going to be starting to build an open source hub. Is there a way to choose one thing to start with? I only found out about you from the Guardian article that came out a couple months ago, and it was overwhelming, but it seemed incredibly complete, which is wonderful, but I don't know, it's overwhelming.
Well, OpenBTS has always impressed me, and in fact, I'm writing, between attending sessions here, I've been writing the prospectus. It's at 33 pages now. For this open source hub, and I'm looking at two different approaches. The first approach is to try and make the city of London a smart, sustainable city. Part of IBM's problem is there's no intelligence in IBM. Okay, there's no true cost economics in their smart city concept. Every one of your smartphones is putting 10 Chinese into a leukemia ward. Okay, because every one of those smartphones is based on a class A carcinogenic. And so there are true costs in terms of water and all this other stuff. So a smart city actually has to understand the true costs of everything, and it has to move itself off the grid, and it has to get away from centralized power and centralized water and centralized sewage and all of these things. It has to become a perpetually learning city. And so working out of a university base with an industrial ecology, there's in the UK, there's an open source consortium. There's also an open source foundation. And even though London could be said by some to be the center of all evil, it's also a pretty cool place which has a direct petabyte channel to India. And I really see some enormous potential in using London as a stepping stone to getting India to become the first open source everything nation. I love India, and one of the things I like about India, it's the most fucking complicated country on the planet. This has 22 languages that are spoken by at least 1 million people each, okay, and the diversity of everything. So for me, that's one starting point. The other starting point, I was very impressed by the project in Mexico, which is installing cellular for a $10,000 drop. I think that's the other starting point, is go into places that don't have cellular service and go with this open spectrum as land that cannot be owned. And once you have them on open BTS, then you get them on open. I mean, we still don't have – I tried – John Gage spoke at my first conference in 1992, and I tried to get him to understand that open office wasn't enough. There are 18 functionalities. If you look up Catalyst, computer-aided tools for the analysis of S&T, there are 18 functionalities that you need on an all-source analyst workstation. We still don't have them. I was a founding member of the Advanced Information Processing and Analysis Steering Group for the entire U.S. government, the entire U.S. intelligence community. And we did surveys, and we found that there were over 20 projects across the U.S. Intelligence community, sometimes three or four, like NSA had at least six. Okay, and each of the groups was building its own all-source fusion workstation, but there was a CASI version, there was an SAIC version, there was an SRA version, there was an IBM version. And all of them were using proprietary crap, and they weren't really thinking through all of the details. So we need, beyond the cell phone, the simple cell phone with time limits, we need an analytic workstation. And then we need the ability to share information. And we need the ability to bring in information. I mean, I love it that there are plants now with cell phones. And these plants will literally send a text message when they need water. This is really way cool. So we're getting to a point, and I think the starting point is OpenBTS and the mindset behind that. There's a lot of stuff that has impressed me this time around on values. Open source is a meme, it's a mindset, it's a value system. And it's the value system that has to replace the existing system, which is about fencing in the commons and criminalizing what used to be the rights of man. So that's my answer. One is start at a city level, and the other is start at bottom up with a $10,000 unit.
Cool.
And move there.
Thanks. And just very quickly, so the project that I want to do is to have a currency that's only generated when the community that's using it believes that what is being created is of value. So educational purposes, planting urban agriculture, things like that. So someone plants a garden, they pay them in this currency, and then that person can spend it in this community.
I think there's a lot to be said for time energy-based currency, and there's a lot to be said for local spending. There's a lot to be said for not allowing value to be extracted from a community. But I'm not smart enough to understand all these currencies.
Okay, and just sorry, last I asked on P2P. It's a group on Facebook and just everywhere P2P.
Okay.
They someone asked they wanted to know what your thoughts were on cryptocurrencies.
Before I answer that, let me just say that we may not even last an hour because I sense today's been an exhausting day, and with Ellsberg and Snowden at the highlight, some of you may want to go sleep, and that's fine. So don't hesitate to go over and raid the book pile. If you decide to leave early, I'm fine with that. I am not taking those books back with me. And if you're an entrepreneur and you want to grab 5 to 10 of them and sell them to someone else, please do. And just remember your guilt, okay? Earth Intelligence Network at PayPal. I'm thinking about doing a PhD if I get a job and I can afford it. And one of the things that's really yeah, I know. I mean, Herman Daly told me I was an idiot. I mean, why do that? Why subject you to the abuse of lesser minds as you go through it? But I'm titillated because I've actually invented a completely new PhD that takes political science to a new level. Imagine if political science were actually about community-based, ethical, evidence-based decision-making. And one of the things I've learned in looking into the PhD is that the course on political economy really matters, and that Marxism has never really been properly understood in terms of some of its analytics. For me, cryptocurrencies are nothing more than a way of expressing value, and it's a way of expressing how you want your political economy to operate. And so I'm not smart enough to understand cryptocurrencies, except I have understood that a lot of people have lost a lot of money by throwing away disk drives that had cryptocurrencies on them. So this is a small flaw in the system. So I don't have an opinion other than to say, you know, let 1,000 flowers bloom. Okay, yes, sir.
I was just going to say first you should call your new PhD political engineering.
Well, you know, if you saw my open source everything slide, it's about engineering. It really is about engineering and sustained resilience, and the Earth is a closed system. So the whole idea of the new PhD is to demand that people learn how to do multidisciplinary analytics and holistic analytics, and true cost economics has to be embedded in everything. And they also have to learn how to do community-based decision-making, which is what the Native Americans knew. There's a great book, 1491, before Columbus arrived. The average Mayan man only had to work for – why don't we take a five-minute break and everybody go get a book, and then I'll start talking again if anyone wants to talk to me. Great. Thank you. Let me give you one. Oh, yeah, no, I'll give these to my two sons. What is it? Oh, lock pickers. What do? Oh, no, I know that. And, in fact, I brought one of my sons here a long time ago. Yeah, it's not something I do a lot of. I mean, but, yeah, it is a good puzzle. It is a good puzzle. Oh, here, I have something for you. think you and I have talked before.
Yeah.
There we go. All right. This is my old boots. Thank you. I want to point out that this generous lady has just given me a $10 bill. Shame on all the rest of you. Guilt. Feel the guilt. Oh, bless you, sir. This is gas money. So thank you. Now, look, and you know, all my books are free online, and I love books, and I recommend you read them in hard copy so you can mark them up and stuff. But the book Intelligence for Earth, absolutely read it online. Thank you, sir, very much. Read it online because it has all the active links. Thank you, Dennis. God, this is great. I should do this more often. This is kind of like a cool thing. This is so much better than me sitting down on the mezzanine. Thank you. Bless you, sir. Hold on. I remember you here. This is for the hat you gave me. Golden Candle of Truth Seekers. So, oh, man, look at this. Feel this guilt vibe, man. Bless all of you. Thank you so much. I really am grateful. There's something about unemployment that teaches you humility. Thank you very, very much. And if anyone wants my CIA badge number written in their book, thank you, sir. I would be glad to stay on and sign books with lewd and obscene messages in a minute. Yeah, hang on. Okay. Thank you so much. God, I think we've discovered a new way of gifting. All right. I will do a dance. All right. Hey, guys, this is great. This is, I mean, it's a $250 trip up here, not counting the hotel. Thank you so much. All right, so give me a question, and thank you. And you can tuck money into my socks.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is New York City. I think you have to take your pants off now.
Hey, you do not want to go there. Short, fat, bald, and ugly.
You know, there was a sex talk in here right before, so, you know, everybody...
Yes, sex toys, and you know what? It went in one ear and out the other. I know, you're handsome, man. And by the way, bald people have more testosterone. So, all right, question, and thank you, all of you, for your generosity. I really appreciate it, and don't leave any books behind.
So my question is, I guess I'm. This is my first Hulk conference. And,
you've got to come back every time.
It's amazing, and there was a ton of great stuff, and you've talked about a lot of things too, but they're all, I think, understandably because of the people here, kind of bottom up types of things. Mm-hmm. You know, better tools and, you know, better ways for people to blow whistles and give us transparency and things like that.
Right, and not integrated.
And partly it was like, okay, there's a crisis of leadership or a leadership vacuum. And my question is, you know, we're a tiny, tiny minority of the population, and most people want to roll into work at 9, leave at 5, flat screen TV, big barbecue grill, and
they've been trained that way.
And Fox News. So my question is there a chance that you get some leadership, either at the highest levels of our political system or senior levels of our intelligence agencies, or where all these firms, or is it just, I mean, because of the way the system is electorally and lobbyist-wise, just impossible? And then we need to focus our attentions back into what you talked about, which is really localized solutions to the values that we want to have and the systems that we want to create.
That's a wonderful question, which I will take 4 hours to answer.
Can I go past 8 hours?
No. We're not doing that anymore. I'm an old guy. But no, I will not stop as long as one of you has a question. But please don't stay late. first off, let's look at Iceland. Iceland did the right thing. And they now have one of the best economies on the planet. Integrity is a value in this day and age. one of the things that troubles me, and one of the reasons I am very excited about this open source everything hub, I mean, I'm very grateful to Nafiz Ahmed because I've been marginalized. I had my first two books had forewords written by senators who were chairman of the Senate Select Committee for Intelligence. In 1994, people were talking about me as a future director of national intelligence. And then they figured out that that meant we would do it faster, better, cheaper. And I lost them on the cheaper. Okay. So that was the end of me as an up-and-comer. And I survived for a while, but then I was asked in a verbal interview to declare all my foreign contacts. I declared all 7,500, and the chimpanzees went nuts. And even though a judge found in my favor and I now have my top secret restored, they basically put me out of business. They cost me $6 million. Because you lose your clearances, you lose your contracts, you lose your business, you lose everything. And so one of the things that's very exciting to me is I think we're on the verge of an integration across the opens. And that's what we've been missing, is everybody's in their narrow little open niche, you know, open spectrum or open software, open hardware, but they're not putting it all together. And one of the things I look to is crisis mappers. I'm hugely impressed by everything that Jen and Patrick Muir have done and other volunteers. If you're not familiar with crisis mappers, take a look at it because it uses open source geospatial. And then like in Haiti, for example, all of the SMS messages in Creole and French to members of the Haitian diaspora across the United States then get translated with geospatial references to a volunteer network that then plots it on a map with triple redundancy. And you end up having in 6 to 24 hours better information than CIA could get in 100 years. Okay? Because you're harnessing the people who are on the ground, and you're just doing all of this. So I think integrating open sources is the next big leap. And the reason that matters is because it's affordable, and it's interoperable, and it's scalable. I mean, we have reached the end of the era of lies. We have reached the end of the era in which all these – I mean, Google is shit, okay? Google hits less than 2% of what's on the web. And you see what someone else has paid for you to see. And all these other search companies, I mean, Yahoo is going through its own identity crisis. If anyone knows Melissa, I'd like to talk to her. But it's almost impossible to break through all these gatekeepers because the problem with gatekeepers is they're absolutely certain they will lose their job if they let a new idea in. And so Yahoo has an, you know, you guys know that Google started with stealing Yahoo's search engine, HP being stupid about closing Alta Vista, and CIA funding. Okay, so they had a trifecta on top of Larry's having a good idea about taking Eugene Garfail's citation analytics from the Institute of Scientific Information. So I'm babbling. Ask me a question.
So we're in New York State, which has more now, I think, restrictive firearms laws than in Canada. Talk to me about civilian firearms ownership in the future.
Well, open carry is one of the most important opens.
Does a follow-on. Open carry is one thing, but concealed, I think, is more important.
You're right. Actually, I used to have a concealed permit, and the main reason I had it was to not worry soccer moms. You know, because you show up at a soccer game armed and dangerous and they freak. We've trained a nation of sheep. I don't know what the answer is, but I do believe that one of the things we need to do is really focus on helping our police understand that they're supposed to be our police and that the day that they're federalized, they are righteous targets. Okay. Yes, sir.
Good evening. I've learned many things so far tonight.
None of them before you walked into this room, or all of them after you walked into it. Yeah, never mind. That came out wrong. Go ahead.
I have a spy question.
Yes, a spy question. Good. I do spy questions. Yeah, I do spy questions.
This is, unfortunately, a very geeky and hacker-related technical spy
question. It should be.
So given that odds are pretty good that the NSA has somewhere between 20 and 40 years relative advanced knowledge in mathematics compared to the general mathematical community.
I wish Thomas Drake were here, but go on.
And given that it's general accepted practice throughout our government to approve the advanced encryption standard for encoding of highly classified documents, how likely do you feel that it is that the NSA or another governmental agency has the ability to break AES or compromise it in much better time than is publicly known?
Well, let me unpack that a couple of ways. One is that you guys know how you can go to Best Buy and you can buy that thing where you plug your USB into the electrical circuit on one floor. You connect the router to the electrical circuit on one floor, and then on a second or third floor you can get it back out. Okay, the Chinese have been doing that to NSA for the last 10 years. That's why they want their own power stations. So don't assume NSA is as smart as you think. Number two, one of the things that worries me about Larry and Google is computational mathematics, because I think I'm an idiot, okay? I mean, it's a real struggle for me to do 2 plus 2. But one of the things that really troubles me is that algorithms and artificial intelligence are only as strong as your strongest idiot. And so when you do algorithms that have false conclusions and bad ideas, what you're actually doing is you're planting a cancer in the code. And we don't have a good review process for computational mathematics. And that's one of the things I think we need to do a lot more of. In fact, Dennis, I've encouraged to take a look at, you know, computational mathematics and computer design and self-healing and all of this stuff. One of the things that stunned me, I guess I'm naive, but for IBM and Dell and Apple and all these other companies to actually agree to short-circuit their own computers for NSA, that essentially means that if you're a foreigner and you buy a computer made in the USA, you're a dumbass, okay? How could they do that? So NSA has been doing a lot of jury rigging of systems right at the factory. And last but not least, on encryption, I think it is possible to create encryption systems that can't be broken by NSA, but I'd much rather not be noticed. And that's why I've become a huge believer in anonymity. And I'm really, really concerned about the loss of anonymity. And in fact, one of the most beneficial things for me at this conference has been absorbing my realization that I've been focusing so hard on open source everything, I have forgotten about anonymity, identity, privacy, and rights. And so this afternoon, after I came back from dinner with Identity Lady, who I'm sorry to say is competing with me, but I like her very much, I wrote a new page into my proposal on those four things. And so I would say those four things need a lot of attention. And I guess my bottom line is NSA is smart, but I don't think it's that smart. And I would not overestimate their capacity. Now, what NSA does have is an extraordinary ability to intimidate the CEOs of U.S. companies that should know better. Okay. Follow up?
No. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Yes, sir.
I was just going to add on the encryption side. I spoke with Matt Blaze earlier, and he said...
Oh, Matt Blaze is here?
Uh-huh.
God, he's an original.
And I was curious how you first got into intelligence.
Okay. I was an oil brat. I grew up overseas.
Oh, and would you do it again today?
Oh, yes, yes. Look, I recommend to all of you, if you can get in and get the marijuana waiver, you absolutely should work for intelligence. Okay. It's a lifetime experience. It is like being a Jesuit priest or a ninja warrior or whatever. I mean, it's really cool. And the fact that it's really fucked up and stupid has absolutely nothing to detract from the coolness value. Okay? I mean, I'm powerful as an advocate for open source because I've done it all. I mean, I've done everything, including satellites and planting devices, audio devices close in. I've done it all. stealing diplomatic pouches, planting bugs in ministers' offices. You know, I mean, that's really cool stuff. Now, let me tell you, when you're debriefing a terrorist or when you're doing an audio op, you get 1 minute of useful information for every 4 hours of tape. I mean, people don't understand just how stupid NSA is. NSA processes less than 1% of what it collects. And Binny taught me this. NSA is about spending money on collection that they will store forever but never process. Okay? Unless they want to fuck with you, in which case you're seriously screwed. Okay? So that's why you want to be invisible, which I have not done well at. I've lost my train of thought. Where were we? Oh, yes. Would I do it all again? Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know what? I consider it an honor to serve the U.S. government. And believe it or not, I believe in the Constitution. I believe in the Republic. And I'm really terrified about how fucked up my government has gotten. But I do believe in it. And I believe in the profession of intelligence.
How did you originally get into that?
What's that?
About how you originally got into it.
Okay. I grew up as the son of an oil engineer, 10 years in Latin America, 10 years in Asia, including 4 years in Vietnam as a kid. And I went and did my undergrad at Muhlenberg. Then I got a master's at Lehigh and decided I'd become overly academic and intellectual. And there was a Marine Corps recruiter who basically sucked me in, and he was right. I mean, I needed the Marine Corps. It was a balancing factor. It made me rough and ugly in some areas, and so it was a balancing factor. But then the Marine Corps was at peace, and it was boring, so the CIA had a little ad, and I was their dream candidate in a lot of ways. I mean, lived overseas all my life, had a master's degree in predicting revolutions, spoke fluent Spanish. I could do very well, and I was a high performer. But it turned out that I wasn't their dream candidate because they changed the psychological profile for my class to self-starter entrepreneurial. And the old profile, which they went right back to, was little gray man who follows orders and doesn't create problems. Okay? And so I was very lucky to get into CIA and to do the 9 years that I did, three back-to-back clandestine tours and three Washington tours. And I don't regret a minute of it. It was a life-changing experience, and I think, you know, it's one of those areas. I also recommend you join the military, and consider, you know, the Coast Guard. You get to kill people and wear boat shoes, or the Air Force. You have air conditioning everywhere you go, you know. So I do believe in the military. I believe in the universal draft, and they haven't gotten to a beard exception yet. And in fact, the Special Forces guys that went into Afghanistan, I was there at Special Forces headquarters when the idiot general told them to shave. He was a leg. I mean, he was a straight guy, and he didn't get it. But now, of course, everybody sports a big beard, and it's the American Taliban is alive and well in Afghanistan. All right, David. This is the president of the New York Internet Society who hosted me at Liberation Technology Conference.
Sorry, I'm working on a related project, too. This is a very open-ended question, the role of games and simulations in education and activism.
Ah, wonderful. The role of games and simulation. Now, Medar Gabel, as I've mentioned, is someone I really respect. One of the problems I have with serious games is that they're all little stovepipes. And I asked Medard one day, why can't we get all these serious games to share data and to actually become useful? So you have a water game and a health game and, you know, all different kinds of games. And he said it's like trying to play all the sports on the same field at the same time. You have to design from the bottom up. Now, that's what I funded when I had money. And Medard Gabel, you can look him up online, Big Picture, Little World or something like that. Medard is ready to build the digital Earth game. I paid to have that trademarked in his name. And so I believe that serious games are the way we get to direct democracy. I believe that serious games are the way we get to connecting every mind to all information relevant to any decision anywhere in the world. And if you're a member of the Pakistani diaspora, You should be able to vote on issues back home as well as issues here. And in fact, you should be able to vote on the sanitation arrangements in the Frankfurt airport, okay, if that's part of your world. So I believe serious games are absolutely going to be the main interface for connecting minds with information, with voting, with decisions. But they're not there yet, which is why I no longer go to serious game conferences.
Oh, okay. So with that one project, how much development was done with that?
$15,000. He needs $5 million. If I were to get my $100 million, he would get the first five.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. So bear with me here. Is there any kind of source code that could be used for other projects that's far along enough?
That I would ask him about, but I don't think he's a coder. He's more of a designer.
Uh-huh.
And I would love to see this group have a track on games next year, but not – it has to be an integrated track. It has to be an integral consciousness track. It has to be how do we pull all this together and how do we make the open data work with multiple things and how do we do crowdsourcing so we get to feedback loops. So how can we calculate where the best use of an ounce of water is? Because we're wasting a lot of water in different decisions that we make, and these decisions are made in complete isolation from one another. I think we're on the verge of a major mind-expanding breakout sometime in the next 5 or 10 years.
No. Well, now I'll just plug my own project here, but I'm working with – at LiveTech we have a presentation about this on a mobile and online game to promote activism where you would get points and prizes for – doing different things and hooking into educational resources to that. Our first, you won't be surprised to hear this, our first iteration is going to be focused specifically on internet governance and policy, but looking, it will be open source and move to a...
But they can look it up at the Internet Society.
Yeah, right. And it will become a more of a general purpose platform that can be adapted to other things.
Part of the problem with activists is they're stovepiped. I was sitting in with CEOs...
I agree about that.
Okay. Yeah, I know. And I was sitting in with a bunch of CEOs that Joseph McCormick had brought together from Transpartisanship. And halfway through the meeting, I realized that these CEOs were all comfortable with the two-party tyranny because they knew that when their party was in power, they would get lots of money. And when their party was out of power, they would get half as much. But it was kind of a calculated thing. They were terrified of the idea of a Congress that finally said, fuck you, we're not going to give you all these handouts. Okay, so the activists, in my view, have been rotten at working together. They've been rotten at sharing information. And, I mean, I love John Perry Barlow, and I respect Mitch Kapoor in a manly way. Well, no, wait a minute. I don't think I want to go there. anyway, I think John Perry's a cat's whiskers. And EFF has done a lot of good, but I think EFS has lost it. They're not serious. So who do you look to leadership? So, David, can we let someone else in? Okay, thank you.
Yes, Robert. I recall you mentioning that you, ran in the 2012 election to gather...
Wait, say that again?
I recall that you mentioned that you ran in the 2012 election to gather information on the other candidates.
For 6 weeks. Not to gather information on the other candidates, to get them to read my letter.
Yeah. Well, one...
The short answer is I think a third of them read it. Only one of them answered, Rocky Anderson. I let Greg Johnson drive my MGB when I went up to New Hampshire with him. And Greg's a good guy. But the bottom line is not a single one of these. Jill Stein, none of them was willing to contemplate the one thing that could bring us all together. They were all focused on, I want to be president of this small party, whether I win or lose.
What about Ron Paul?
Ron Paul, I think, is controlled opposition. I think Ron Paul is there to keep the libertarians down. I'll tell you what, I think Ron Paul won a lot of the primaries, and they were stolen from him. Yes, and I think that had Ron Paul been willing to reach out to Dennis Kucinich and create a coalition cabinet, which is what I explicitly suggested, I wanted to have a green. I actually, if you go to bigbatusa.org, I have a named coalition cabinet. Balanced budget, end all taxes. The APT tax was created by someone smarter than me, but it taxes currency and transaction. It basically blows up the pie from which you take a tiny fraction. And so Ron Paul could have been president. Colin Powell could have been president if he didn't have a crazy wife who has made him promise not to be president, and if he had challenged Dick Cheney. Okay? Colin Powell would be a great president, but he let Dick Cheney get away with murder. So Ron Paul, for me, is a huge disappointment. Rand Paul actually seems cleverer than his father. No, look, we can have another discussion on Rand Paul. Let me come back to Dennis. And then if you want, get in line and we'll have another question. Go on, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. My other part of my question was going to be, like in the upcoming election, with the two-party tyranny in place, what can we do to educate ourselves so we don't elect another Obama?
Look, you're fucked with the two parties.
Oh.
Okay? There's absolutely no point in voting for anybody that is a Democrat or a Republican. And unfortunately, they have the power. Look, one of the cool things about Briefing Occupy and Electoral Reform is a little video. If you go to YouTube and you look up Steal Occupy Election, you'll get right to it. It's a six-minute video that went to the front page of Reddit. No. I want you to go look for it. Because then we'll spend 6 minutes watching the in history. When I did that, and then when I posted this thing, people came out of the woodwork. I heard from everybody around the country who had any kind of stake in electoral reform. And as a result, there's now an Electoral Reform Act with 11 points that represents the best thinking in this country on how to restore the integrity of our electoral process and the integrity of our governance, okay? And what it boils down to is Congress has the power to pass a law that says that every one of the six accredited parties – I had to actually run for president to learn that there are six accredited parties beyond the Democratic and Republican Party. They're Constitution, Green, Libertarian, and Reform are active, and the Natural Law and Socialist are inactive, okay? But Congress has the power to pass a law, and such a law has been introduced 9 times, the last 4 by Ron Paul, that demands that every state ballot allow anybody on that ballot for any federal office. And Congress will not pass that law because they like being a two-party tyranny. All right? My bottom line is I think we need some kind of precipitant that reactivates Occupy, but with discipline and a brain. And I'm not sure how that's going to happen, but I honestly believe that we're this close to taking the power back. You know, I watched a movie once called A Day Without Mexicans, and it was a great, great movie. But imagine a day without us. I mean, imagine a general strike in this country. Imagine a nonviolent general strike in which we occupy all of the state legislatures, all of the state governor's offices, all of the state representatives, I mean the senators and representatives, we occupy them. And we say, look, this is real simple. We're not leaving until you pass the Electoral Reform Act. I think we would get it. But we lack that cohesion. And we lack that ability to focus on one thing. And that's what I'm good at, is getting to that one thing. But I suck at getting Occupy to pay attention. Okay.
Yeah, thanks for those answers. One more thing. Any way we could put open source into helping our elections become, like, being able to implement open
There's some source? Good things happening in terms of money. I mean, in prior hacker conferences, I've encouraged hackers and gnome decks to attach themselves to corporations and candidates like leeches. I mean, I have this vision of 550 naked congressmen where there's nothing that they do. I mean, take their schedule, okay? Wouldn't it be interesting if every minute of their day were accounted for in public? Wouldn't it be interesting if we made it easy for subversive staffers to post their schedule? If we made it easy to actually track all their money? I mean, there are a lot of documents, and there you can crowdsource the effort of watching the documents and so forth. But again, money and stuff like that, that's a detail. One of the things that I don't agree with Lawrence Lessig about is he's big on corruption and getting money out of politics. But it makes no difference. If you get money out of politics and you can't get ballot access, it makes no difference. It's a hole. Okay?
Thanks for all the answers.
Hi, Mr. Steele.
Robert.
In your opinion, how far away is the U.S. military from a fully automated fighting force, and what do you think the long-term consequences will be?
Well, in 1994, I was asked by the National Research Council to review the U.S. Army's $6 billion communications plan. And the first thing I said was, you guys are assuming that all of your bits are going to be self-generated and you've made no provision for talking to or listening to anyone outside of the U.S. Army. That hasn't changed. Okay? So, number one, they're out of touch with the world. Number two, none of their systems are interoperable. I mean, you have obviously some shared data sharing and stuff, but have you ever seen the Pentagon spaghetti chart? There's a fantastic Pentagon spaghetti chart, and it's all of the little, you know, I mean, if you think about controlling air and artillery and ground forces, and now you have drones. I mean, in Afghanistan, we have real spectrum issues, okay? The Soviets have always been 10 or 15 times tougher than we are on electromagnetic spectrum deconfliction and control, and we don't do that. In fact, we don't even worry. We knew 15 years ago that the drone downlinks could be intercepted, but nobody gave a shit. Okay? So I'm not really impressed. I mean, think of Army automation as the F-35 in code. Okay? Now, think of the Army automation as the F-35 on code and someone just spilled Gatorade on it. Does that answer your question? I mean, that's my personal opinion.
It does. So I take it you don't think much of all the money that DARPA's put into developing an autonomous machine intelligence.
I love the robotic dog. Actually, the best thing in life for me has been my teenager wanted a dog, and my wife, who was a cat lady, allowed him to have one. And so now I walk once a day, two cigars, one cigar out, one cigar back. And it's great. It's absolutely great. I love the dog. He's gotten me away from my computer for an hour a day. So, look, I wrote a letter to Chuck Hagel recently. And one of the problems that we have, there are four levels of analysis in any area, strategic, policy, acquisition, and tactical. Okay? The Department of Defense doesn't have a strategy. Its policies are insane. Pivot to Asia, for example. I mean, these are policies that are thought up by some bimbo who's sleeping with the president. Okay? And then they kind of take on a life of their own. And acquisition is hosed. The Navy can't build a ship. The Air Force can't build an airplane. The Army hasn't figured out that the average bridge loading distance around the world is 30 tons. And, oh, by the way, intervisibility, line of sight distance, is under 1,000 meters, which means the M1A1 is worth what we pay for it in exactly six countries. The average aviation day is hot and humid. The average aviation day for the Navy and the Air Force is warm and not humid, which means that these pieces of crap that we're building fly half as far and loiter half as long and can carry half as much as they should be. Okay? So I wrote the Secretary of Defense a letter which said, look, if you let General Flynn do his job, we can cut the budget by 30%. We can create a 450-ship Navy. The Navy now has as many admirals as it has ships. I kid you not. 283. Okay? I'm serious. And the reason is because of the inflation in Washington. I was the second ranking civilian in Marine Corps intelligence in 1993, and I was a GS-14. Today they have like 10 SESs, and they haven't grown, okay? I mean, it's just the whole rank inflation thing is insane. What was your question again?
It was about automation of the U.S.
I have reverse ADD.
So following up on what you just said, yeah. Do you think some other country is in position to overtake the U.S. in that respect?
I wouldn't want to overtake the U.S. on anything. I mean, certainly the Department of Defense, and it's not just the Department of Defense. One of the problems we have is we can't keep the rest of the government honest. I mean, CIA and State Department have hosed Afghanistan in a number of different ways. There's a guy named Gunny Poole who's written a number of books on the Eastern way of war and stuff like this. Okay, the answer to American technology power is a half-naked Asian who's really good at moving 50 meters without being caught. Okay, and that's what they did to us in Vietnam. Over the Tunnels of Cu Chi is one of the greatest books ever written. Do not underestimate other people. We tend to substitute technology for thinking. We tend to throw money at a problem rather than intelligence. And as a result, the U.S. military is a hollow military that is stretched too thin. And oh, by the way, the infantry is 4% of the force, takes 80% of the casualties, and gets 1% of the Pentagon budget. That's criminal. All right? So I think the U.S. military is a hanger queen. Okay? Have a nice day.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, sir.
We just need an escalation of commitment. That's all I'm hearing.
Send Hillary.
So I'm really interested in some of your philosophy of like revolution and how that happens, and I'm also kind of interested in how that matches up with kind of the current plan and or maybe shift for how the U.S. conducts militarization, being like training foreign militias, drones, as you were talking about. Even like an increase in maybe the looking to autonomous weapons. I guess what I'm wondering is like I was in Colombia recently and learning some of that history and how like the FARC starts out as like a group of campesinos trying to like defend their own land, do it peacefully. They're eventually attacked, maybe not directly by a military, but by a paramilitary, somebody being funded by a government or something like that. And then it gets violent. And I know you talked about like nonviolent revolution and occupying space, but I guess what I'm wondering is, like, does that get violent at some point? And then, you know, how do you carry out a revolution without becoming an oppressor like yourself? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an important convoluted question. That's okay because I have an important convoluted mind. First off, the U.S. has no fucking business intervening all over the world. We went wrong with Woodrow Wilson and Theodore Roosevelt, okay? It's just astonishing to me that the U.S. public actually believes all this bullshit. You know, it's not just the 935 lies. It's over 1,000 military bases overseas with all of the rapes that those come with. And traffic accidents and everything else, and that's money that's being spent overseas that should be spent here at home. So, number one, I think the U.S., and this is where, I mean, I don't misunderstand me. I think Ron Paul is 80% absolute wonderful and 20% toxic. And it's that 20% toxic that kills me. Or that kills all of us. He's a great man who like Colin Powell, sold out to the system. And that's too bad. And I really was very impressed by Ellsberg today. He really forced the issue of what is our responsibility. And one of the things that I'm thinking about now is how do we make it possible for whistleblowers to really do whistleblowing with absolute security. And one of the obvious answers is a brown envelope, you know, mailed someplace, but it has to avoid the mail cover, and that's the problem. So maybe it's going to end up being Starbucks is the covert people's revolutionary exchange, you know. You drop in, you say, I want a cinnamon bun with toasty what's-its, and they'll say, okay, here's the flash drive, you know. And so there's just a real opportunity here. Violence, you know, the Earth Intelligence Network SEAL has a stiletto in it, because there are inevitably assholes that have to be killed, but one at a time. One stiletto at a time, okay? Bombing the shit out of a village in order to get someone that Muhammad told you was a terrorist, but the real truth is that Muhammad owes this guy $60,000, okay? So killing him is actually getting rid of that debt. This goes back to Vietnam. We do this every single place we go. The first people we kill are the guys that owe money, or that are owed money, you know, because we, like Somalia, we talked to the English teachers because they spoke English, you know, and they ended up being able to sell the death of people, you know, the highest bidder, you know, you give me $10,000 and I will get the Americans to kill the guy that you owe money to. I mean, do not underestimate the stupidity of the U.S. system, all right? But as a general rule, I have absolutely come to believe in nonviolence. I just think it's a time-energy equation. And I think nonviolence is absolutely the way to go, because violence inevitably destroys infrastructure. It destroys trust. So I am not at all interested in, for example, repurposing Guantanamo to hold Goldman Sachs, which would be a very good use of that facility. So I have again lost my train of thought. But you have a chance to ask one more convoluted short question.
So I guess talk more about the general strike and what that would look like and how it would happen.
At what point do you want to stop being sodomized? It's up to you.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Meh. That wasn't meant for you. I mean, I was actually thinking of a New Zealand officer. Go on.
So twice this evening I've heard reference to Iceland and their plight and their success and what they've done. It almost seems like America would have to come to the same point as Iceland has come to before we could actually get our shit together and have that revolution to make, to correct
or one
the
state.
Problem. So, like, so does, is it really going to take that? Like, do we really need to hit that collapse? Or can we prevent this before we hit that collapse?
You know,
that
collapse is
definitely going to happen.
I would love to run for president just because I'm the only guy that doesn't want to be the president. And really, I mean, I think there's some ideas here. Coalition cabinet balanced by – oh, and these should be announced in advance. You should not be eligible on election day if you have not already announced your cabinet and had cabinet-level debates, at least for attorney general and defense and state and maybe agriculture. Okay? So, I mean, these are obvious things. We're electing personalities. And we're electing personalities whose primary ability is to pretend to agree with you, all of you, okay? Whereas my campaign is about what I, you know, like I was interviewed by On the Issues for, because they interview all the presidential candidates, and that's a worthy, useful place. But the reality is what I think should not matter as long as I'm committed to making sure that what all of you think is on the table. And none of the presidents today actually give a shit what you think. They only care about who has given them the most money and what they think. And so that's a problem. So I'm worried. I believe the federal government has reached its maximum Peter Principle level. And however many good people are trapped in that bad system, it's a system that is destined to fail in a big, big way. I mean, look at New Orleans, Katrina. Good job, Brownie. Okay? I mean, I was sick to see people on bridges for 4 days. Had I been president, I would have given him my credit card and told every helicopter pilot in the country to get his ass to New Orleans and start popping those people out. how is it that I can think of this and they can't? But we're going to get more and more such disasters. I mean, climate is, of course, a man-made problem. Never mind HAARP. Climate is a man-made problem. Paving over the Mississippi, fracking, all of these other things. I believe the solution is going to come from individual states. Vermont, for example, which is rapidly getting to the point where a majority of the legislatures would be willing to vote for secession. Now, I don't particularly recommend secession, but I absolutely do recommend throwing the federal government out of town. No federal ownership of land, and all federal employees have to be registered as agents of a foreign power. So you actually, the states have to get a grip on what they're doing. Yes, sir.
Two questions. The first is on back on this collective action, this strike kind of idea. No, but the examples I've heard are all like they're never going to happen because it involves people doing stuff and their people are lazy.
Fastest way to get everybody on the street is to shut down the internet.
But here's another idea, which is something that everybody might really 50 million people might be really happy to not pay taxes. So if you were organizing some sort of general strike, right, it's like April 15th comes, you don't file taxes, you don't pay taxes. I mean, sometimes a lot of them are taken out of your paycheck. But if 50 million people don't file taxes, the IRS is not going to be able to, it's not going to come close to being able to deal with that issue. And it's, I can't think of a louder message than cutting off the money. That
yeah, I agree. Cutting off the money is
and
huge.
People like to keep their money. So.
Well, and it may be, and again, I'm not smart enough to have all of these answers, but for instance, I like the whole idea of communities moving to an economy that's non-taxable, and basically creating forms of exchange where there is no withholding tax. And I don't know. Well, I don't know what all the answers are. I mean, to get 50 million to do this. There's a book by Paul Ray and Sherry Anderson called Cultural Creatives, and so there's at least 50 million smart people in this country, and they generally live in Oregon, Washington, Vermont, and New Hampshire. Okay, and there are few in New York. Okay, and the problem is nobody has managed to get all of these people to coalesce. We're all just treading water. And this comes back to the whole issue of preconditions of revolution versus a precipitant. Something could happen tomorrow to turn Ed Snowden into a presidential candidate that would just rock and money would throw through and so forth. Obviously, it's not working for me. Okay. But if that happens, then there's a kind of momentum. And you can move forward. I think not paying taxes. I have given serious thought to the whole issue of whether I would pay taxes if I were not unemployed, because I'm now at a point where I'm very uncomfortable with the fact that the government is borrowing $1 trillion a year in my name, and 50% of the federal government is documented waste. Whether you look at agriculture or energy or health or the military weapons acquisition, whatever. The numbers are very standard. They're very similar across each mission area. It's between 45% and 55% waste, documented waste. Okay, and I mean I would at a minimum want to cut that waste. If I cut that waste, I would have the federal budget down to $1.5 trillion a year, which means I not only would not have to borrow $1 trillion a year, which is for corporate and individual welfare, but I would be saving $500 billion a year. If I eliminated that waste, I honest to God don't know what the answers are. At some point in time, something, I don't know what, is going to happen, and it is going to change the country overnight, and that's called a precipitant. But I don't know what it will be.
My second question is, apologize in advance, this is a stupid question. It seems like they've made it harder and harder to own guns or to acquire guns, or there's definitely seems like a little bit of a war on guns. I don't know if I've got that exactly right. But is there any kind of loophole that exists at the federal level or even at a state
There's
level.
No loophole when the Supreme Court has been bought and paid for. Okay? I mean, we no longer have a Supreme Court in the United States of America. What we have is a bunch of paid lawyers that have been subverted by Justice Powell and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Citizens United was the death of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the fact that Congress didn't come right back and slam that down tells you, I mean, the Congress really became corrupt when Newt Gingrich destroyed Speaker Wright and turned all members of Congress into foot soldiers for their political parties rather than balance of power, Article 1 of the Constitution. No, there's no loophole. What's going
to
happen?
Are there any methods to get permission to acquire guns?
No, why should you have to ask permission? I mean, it's your sacred right. I would even restore gun ownership to felons that serve their time. And the bottom line here is the Constitution has been subverted. And again, I come back to the whole idea for me is bottom up. I mean, Oath Keepers and getting the police to understand that they're either on your side or they're a target. And that is something that's going to happen one of these days. Yes, sir.
I have a two-part question. One, this is maybe the easier one, probably not though. What take do you have as a former member of an intelligence apparatus on the assassination of Gerald Bull? Are you familiar with him?
No.
He's a large gun designer. Worked for Canadian military, U.S. military. Was involved in HAARP. Then moved on to working with Iraq.
I believe a lot of people have been killed to get them out of the way, but I have no opinion on this guy. I have no opinion on this guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's why.
Next question.
Second, do you know anything about the death of Michael Hastings, the writer, in his
car? Boston Breaks. There's no question that we murder with impunity. I mean, John F. Kennedy was killed by his own government. Martin Luther King was killed by his own government. Senator Tower was probably assassinated. Wellstone, yes, a number of others. And, of course, activists and selected journalists. And Boston Breaks, basically, your car now can have a little thing put on the computer that will allow them to from a nearby car. You have what's called path loss, which a lot of you probably already know about. But if you have another car within a distance, a path loss acceptability distance, you can basically ramp up the speed and shut down the brakes. And that's called Boston Brakes. And that may have been used to kill Diana. I don't know myself. But one of the things that troubles me about the FBI is they're not really serious about preventing crime. Because if I were the director of the FBI, one of the things I would be looking at very, very carefully is every single murder of an activist. And I would be plotting patterns. And I would be looking at this stuff. And I would basically be protecting the people rather than protecting the elites, which is what they do. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Hi. Welcome back. As far as China getting pushy militarily, they've been pushy economically for a while, and nobody seems to make anything. Also, a little.
Well, we're about to be sidelined economically. I mean, the U.S. is no longer the reserve currency. Russia and China are making their big deals on energy with other currencies. The Chinese have created a new international development bank. Everybody understands that the IMF and the World Bank are corrupt to the bone. This Trans-Pacific thing, I don't know why the president thinks it's going to be signed. He was laughed out of Phnom Penh a while ago. And there's an alternative Asian economic regional cooperation thing that is basically saying we're going to ignore the TPP. So one of the things that I think we're coming off a boom period. I think we peaked in about 1965. That was back when everybody could look forward to a pension at the end of 20 years and, you know, Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons and the whole bit, you know, is Alexan days. And the world is just now starting to come to grips with the fact that the United States is toxic. I mean, they've known it to one degree or another, but now there's no longer any financial or cultural or other advantage to letting the U.S. have its way. And so I see the next big boom is in the southern hemisphere. There's a separate internet being built from Vladivostok all the way down, you know. I think the United States is increasingly marginalized. And one of the things that really concerns me is I think our own elites have come to this conclusion. And they're now allowing the United States to be hollowed out. We're not tending to our seed corn, including education and science and technology and engineering and mathematics.
I mean, great Chinese students who really care and want to go home and make China.
Poverty is a wonderful incentive.
I'm meeting the ones who are well to do enough to be studying the United States. And they're dedicated to improving the environment.
Get closer to the mic.
They're dedicated to learning how to take care of the environment. A lot of the things that we regard as good old-fashioned values, whatever, but they want that for their own country, and they want to go back. They don't want to stay here.
And that's good. I'm starting to see a lot of Salvadorians go back. I mean, one of the problems is when we invade another country, what we create is an illegal immigration problem. And we've created gangs. Exactly. My second book, The New Craft of Intelligence, has this whole thing on how immigration pressure is coming up. I mean, the whole point of a good foreign policy is to keep them there. Okay? And I mean that in the nicest possible way. But in fact, we support 42 of the 44 dictators on the planet. Okay? North Korea and Cuba are the only two that we don't really like. And frankly, I love Cuba because I want to go visit Hemingway's house. And Cuba also has the only sustainable agriculture in the Western Hemisphere because we deprived them of Monsanto and all the pesticides and Roundup and all of this.
What did your old buddies think of? But there are bums.
Well, part of the problem is, again, you have an industrial era hierarchical government that thinks it's efficient to deal with a dictator. Ambassador Mark Palmer has written an excellent book called Breaking the Real Axis of Evil. And it's a plan for wiping out all 44 of the dictators. And essentially what it boils down to is if I were restructuring state and defense, you would have an assistant secretary. You'd have an undersecretary for democracy, real democracy, not what we call democracy, which is do it our way. You would have an assistant secretary for those who agree to a 5-year buyout plan and an assistant secretary for those who don't. And then over at defense, you would have, again, the same thing. But we're not serious about democracy. All we want is to get our economic agreements that favor the 1% in both countries over the 99% in both countries. And the reason the TPP has so many secret parts to it is because every single one of those secret parts is fuck you very much, okay? And that's criminal. Secret agreements should not be allowed. Yes, sir?
How important do you think the Sunni-Shia conflict is in the world? And do you think that Obama growing up in a Sunni country has something to do with our foreign policy?
Well, first off, I'm told Dick Cheney did not understand that invading Iraq would unleash the Shiites. Iran played us like a fiddle, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. I think the Sunni-Shiite conflict is very important, and one of the big problems we have right now is that Saudi Arabia is fucking us again. They funded Wahhabism in the 1980s, and Saudi Arabia is now funding anti-Shia activities, and they're getting really, really serious about spending a lot of money on militant groups that kill Shiites. Now, I went to Lehigh University with some Iranians, and every single one of those guys was smart enough to be in this room. And I have a lot of respect for the Iranian-Persian culture. One of the problems that we have with our foreign policy mechanism is it's very uninformed and ideologically rooted, and we basically create our own problems. One of the most popular maps on my website is the map of the Shiites and the Sunnis worldwide and their distribution. And one of the things I don't think a lot of people understand is that the reason Iran wants the nuclear bomb is because Pakistan has the Sunni nuclear bomb. They don't want the nuclear bomb for us. They want it for Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. And so this is a really big deal. And I don't have all the answers, but I think it's something that we really need to understand. And what I have found in my experience is that cultural conflicts, I mean, look at how well India has done. We no longer have the Sikhs killing the Hindus and vice versa. And so it is possible to govern toward peace. And I think the Sunni-Shiite conflict needs to be governed on the basis of a solid economic and social foundation. But that's not what Saudi Arabia wants. That's not what Qatar and the United Arab Republic want. Those are three festering cancers in the Middle East and North Africa. And the United States government seems to be totally, totally comfortable with ignoring that cancer. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. First off, do you think any of the involved parties were morally or practically right in the Cliven Bundy affair?
In the what?
The Cliven Bundy affair, when all those ranchers out in Nevada...
Oh, that was fun.
That.
That was fun. Number one, that was about Senator Reid fucking over the public and selling some land to the Chinese for a solar thing. That was not about clearing the cattle. What was really interesting about that was the speed with which information mobilized public support. Now, I think Bundy has his own flaws, and there are obviously issues there. But what that taught me was we need to throw the federal government off all land west of the Mississippi. The federal government should not be allowed to own land, period.
Can I ask a follow-up on that?
Yes.
So at first glance, it appears that the ranchers and such may have gotten their way. How would you draw parallels or contrast between an opposition like that versus the protests in Zuccotti Park, which got broken up and went away?
Well, one group was armed and the other one wasn't. But, you know, but Zuccotti Park could have been different if they had been more focused. I mean, Occupy was for a momentary period of time an inspiration to the world, not just to the United States of America, and they blew it. So I absolutely believe that citizens should be armed and dangerous. And I believe that it's very, very important that law enforcement be hired and evaluated and constantly reminded that they work for the locality and that if they ever federalize, we will kill them. Because that is the single greatest threat to the public, is the idea that everybody will become a SWAT team. If I were president today, I would be canceling all these SWAT teams. I mean, it used to be that two detectives with balls could make an arrest. And now you've got fucking helicopters. This is insane. It's an abuse of the dollar. It's an abuse of the citizen. And they're making mistakes. Their intelligence sucks. Okay, anything else?
That's all.
Thank you.
Okay. Has anyone not asked a question? How about first-timers first? Come on. Let him up. Yeah. And then we'll do the repeaters. Okay.
Hi, Robert. Thank you for doing this. I spent some time early this year studying about countering financing of terrorism. And to me, it seemed like...
Is that the Goldman Sachs version of financing terrorism or the Halawa version of financing terrorism?
Both. And I kind of found that... fighting terrorism at that stage is probably going to be the most effective way of getting rid of it because you nip it in the bud. That's the only thing that I found that would work a lot better than spending trillions of dollars on, you know, going and fighting wars and killing so many people and pissing off half the world.
Yeah, but no one cares about doing it better, okay? I mean, we invaded Iraq because Dick Cheney wanted to make a shitload of money. And one of the things that I've learned is we've created all these terrorists. You know, I actually didn't understand until about 10 years ago. The reason we go to war so much is because war is very, very profitable for a concentrated segment of society. In fact, peace is 100 times more profitable than war, but it's spread out over the 99%. And the 99% is not mobilized to demand peace, okay? I mean, one of the cool things about the APT tax is that the rate is set by the public, not by the government, which means if you want to go to war, you not only have to get Congress to agree to it, you have to get the public to agree to raise the tax to pay for the war, all right? And I also believe we have to restore the universal draft, and I want a mid-career draft as well. I really believe in the soundness of the military as a socializing institution. So from my point of view, I got thrown off Fox News early on because I said the war on terrorism is a fraud. It is a fraud. I mean, we're the terrorists when you get right down to it. And so I certainly believe in frustrating Saudi Arabia in funding terrorism. And I certainly believe that we should not be paying for fascists around the world. But at the same time, I believe we should be doing much, much more to encourage democratic, equal societies where every – I mean, creating a prosperous world at peace is not an ideal. It's actually an essential. Otherwise, we keep eating – you know, it's like you drop enough rats into the aquarium, they start eating each other. So controlling the funding of terrorism requires integrity, and we don't have that. Okay. If we had integrity, we would be all over Israel and Saudi Arabia.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, you guys sort yourselves out, but in general, I want to give preference to people who have not asked a question.
I'm sorry to cut in front of you guys. I'll only say this once, and I know you get mad when
Thank
I say
you.
This.
Thank you. We can do alternatives. Okay, go on.
I'll only say this once, and you'll get mad. I want to thank you for your service.
Oh, bullshit.
I know. I won't say it again.
Okay.
And I'm only going to ask this question because you brought it up first. You mentioned JFK. Let's hear your JFK stories and your JFK.
Well, I've reviewed about 16 books and DVDs on JFK. And so one, you can read my summaries of all of those books. I mean, the obvious thing is the Warren Commission was a cover-up. Lyndon Johnson provided the story. And the FBI, which was founded by a pedophile, was a full partner in that. Now, one of the interesting things is that it's come to light that George Bush Sr. and who's that Israeli leader, Rabin and George Bush Sr. were both in Dallas on the day. Bush Sr. was in Dallas, and so was Rabin. And basically what I think happened, well, first off, Bobby Kennedy warned JFK the morning of the assassination that there was an assassination plot, and JFK put his faith in the Secret Service, which had been subverted. Okay, they basically pulled back, and so did the Dallas cops. I mean, Kennedy created for himself the perfect storm. He pissed off the Israelis by clamping down on CIA smuggling of nuclear materials through Mexico to Israel. So he was stopping the Israeli nuclear program. He had fired the general who was the brother of the Dallas police chief. Bobby Kennedy was all over Hoover, and Hoover was pissed. There were issues with the Cuban criminal gangs based in New Orleans. And CIA, which had set up Kennedy, Bay of Pigs was never, ever going to be a success. And they basically screwed him. And then let the Cuban exiles think that it was JFK that subverted the whole thing. So you had a whole bunch of pissed off Cuban. You know, it's tough being president. Kennedy was betrayed by his own people. But the bottom line is a lot of people, including Texas Energy and New York Money, were mad at him. And they decided to assassinate him. And when they got away with it, what that basically did was turn every subsequent president into a neutered gerbil. And I'm told that Jimmy Carter cried his heart out when he realized this one day in the White House. So we essentially subverted the executive, beginning with the assassination of Kennedy. And then when Newt Gingrich subverted the Congress and Justice Powell subverted the Supreme Court, we've essentially lost all three of our essential government institutions. They are no longer the institutions that have integrity as our founders and the Constitution intended. We now have three monstrosities that are out of control, and I don't know what to do about it. Yes, sir.
So just out of curiosity, do you know what the current state of electrogravitics is at this point? Electrogravitics or anti-gravity or any of that? Because there was a flurry of activity that was going on in the 50s and the 60s with Townsend Brown and others.
Should we go into the UFO and alien stuff?
Well, I'm just curious because I know.
I think that's a yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know NASA was.
Is it almost 2 a.m.? All right. I'll stay as long as there's a modest crowd. All right. Let's do aliens. One of the things that was really fun for me was this congressional testimony. It was actually a funded event. And the defense minister, former defense minister of Canada, was paid to be a witness, and a congressman was paid to be the putative chairman of this hearing and so forth. But one of the things that came out of this was that there are at least five alien species that we are allegedly in touch with through a government outside of government. I think there are some elements of the U.S. government that keep the president and Congress completely in the dark with respect to what they're doing. And I believe that the $2.2 trillion that Rumsfeld could not account for, a lot of that money was spent on underground cities and alien technologies and stuff like that. The bottom. Well, Cynthia McKinney was beating the crap out of him the day before. Now, look, to give Rumsfeld credit, it's possible that he's perfectly stupid and had no knowledge. No. Let's not go there. Okay, but the bottom line is there are at least 100 planets capable of intelligent life, and I've got to believe we're the least intelligent among all of these. And I do believe that there is extraterrestrial intelligence. I do believe that they're smart enough to be worried about us. I do believe that we have acquired some technologies and that we have repressed many technologies, both alien and non-alien. Tesla is a good example of a technology that was killed because it impacted on legacy interests. Okay, I don't know what the status is, but I have been told by people I trust that we have in fact created anti-gravity vehicles and we have in fact created clean stealth vehicles as opposed to the crap that we have with the F-35, which is kind of like a retard version of alien technology. And so, you know, to the extent that I think about aliens, I just hope that they will understand that there is intelligent life on Earth. So
one other question. Dr. Mary's Monkey, is there any credence to the fact that CIA was weaponizing cancer for killing Castro?
Or Hugo Chavez?
Yeah.
I have no direct knowledge, but I have posted on seven CIAs, and one of the problems that we have with our government bureaucracies, especially some of them that are in the national security area, is that the Dulles brothers were very naive, and of course we imported a number of Nazis. We also captured all of the gold in the Philippines. There's a book called Gold Warriors, and we created the Black Lily Trust, rooted in the Secretary of the Treasury. And so for many years after World War II, we were actually funding the reinstatement of fascists in Germany, Japan, and Italy through CIA covert programs with Nazi managers that we had brought back in. We also facilitated the escape of many Nazis with a great deal of money to Argentina. And so there is a Nazi hydra. There is also a Rothschild Rockefeller hydra, and there's a pedophile hydra, Okay. And I think these people recruit their successors from generation to generation. And one of the things I've learned in the past 10 years is that if I were ever DNI, my first priority would be counterintelligence. We have got to clean house because we have got religious and ideological and financial and pervert traitors in the United States government at every level. And we have got to get those people out of there. And we have got to start making decisions based on evidence rather than these other agendas.
Okay, and last question. Why did we go back to, well, I mean, I know we went back to Afghanistan ostensibly for 9/11. But, I mean, the drug trade that immediately was gone. And then now we've got heroin.
Wall Street was having a liquidity problem.
Yeah. Okay. So, and now that heroin production is at record levels yet again.
You know, you got to give the Taliban credit. They stopped the drug production.
They did.
And I am not, I mean, I agree with the Taliban on several key points, including that I was the only analyst in Afghanistan beginning in September 2013 who was telling my colonel that the BSA would not be signed. And he looked at me like I was an alien. And then later he started to look at me in more evil ways, because it was absolutely, totally against what the State Department was saying. It was totally against what General Dunford's people were saying. And there were no computers involved in my thinking. I was actually reading, and I started to see the comparison in between the Treaty of Gandamak, which is where Afghanistan became a colony of the British, and the Pakistani line, starts with a D. Khyber Pass, the Durand line. Okay, the Durand line is an abomination. And there's a wonderful book called The Health of Nation, Society, and Law. And it's written by a Cambridge professor, and it talks about how all the artificial borders that the European colonial powers have imposed essentially overturned centuries of tribal accommodations with one another and with nature. So the BSA was being perceived by a large part of Afghan society as the equivalent of the Treaty of Gandamak. And there's also the whole issue of the international donor money. And Ghani, in his book Fixing Failed States, made this point, and he's made this point effectively in many YouTubes. 80 to 90% of the international donor money never gets to Afghanistan. Basically, a New York $1 billion donation is then outsourced to a nonprofit in the UK, which takes 20% off the top, and then it outsources it to a nonprofit in Turkey, which takes 20% off the top, and then they outsource it to another nonprofit. And by the time you get down there, that $1 billion is turned into at best $100 million worth of shit delivered badly. And so that's one of the things I think the information revolution is going to make possible. I have a global range of gifts table concept where you can actually get down to a person needs a spare part for a Romanian engine from the 1950s, and a guy can make it with a lathe, and a German will pay for the FedEx, and someone else will deliver it, and you're getting to direct assistance there with zero resistance, zero corruption. We go to war to make money for a select group of people. We also go to war to employ a whole bunch of pissed off young people who have no jobs. And I recommend the video, Why We Fight. I recommend the video, The Good Soldier. There were some very heartrending videos of young men being interviewed in Iraq, and one of them was saying society has no use for us. This is all we can do. And that's wrong. That's wrong. And I mean, we have 75,000 amputees in this country. Okay. We have over 300,000 disabled veterans. We have mental diseases out the ass. And the VA response is to drug them up and put them back on the street. Now, I don't fault the VA. The fact is we went to war without understanding what the true costs would be. We've also improved battlefield medicine to the point that we now have a 16-to-1 ratio instead of a 4-to-1 survival ratio. But we didn't do the back office stuff. And so basically we can save them and save them without while they lose their limbs, but then we can't reconstitute them once they're home. That's exactly. Well, that's right. That's right. And again, that's an example of true cost economics. Okay, we're just not creating a society. Go on, sir.
I know I asked a question before. And
that's all right.
You might have seen my face in previous columns. I don't.
I have no memory.
I don't feel you're discriminating against me by asking questions before, but anyways, digressing. You talked about the subversion of basically the three main areas of the United States government. I was watching the World Cup and not doing my job for a good portion of the last several weeks.
I too, except I missed the German game. Shit!
So I was
seven goals.
I was in some bars for some of them, and that was just egregious. But I also was watching on Vice News and other media about what's happening in Brazil. And I guess the question is, are there any sort of successful revolutions may be the right word, but, you know, what's happening there, and is that telling of the future?
I'm not as informed as I'd like to be. For instance, I had to come here to find out that there's a province in Mexico where you're not allowed to own land. I mean, that's way cool. And the French are similar, and that's good. The Porto Alegre and the whole participatory budgeting thing was a brief shining moment in Brazilian history that was rapidly repressed. And one of the things, if I had the open source everything hub, one of the things I would be doing is creating the public intelligence network. And I would be scouring the world for examples like this of what works. Right now, what works is being kept secret.
Yeah.
And the last thing CNN money wants to cover is success stories that aren't directly associated with fraud based in New York. So I'm very excited by the potential of finding and promulgating success stories. But I don't know of any myself. I mean, Singapore is a success story in its own right, and Lee Kuan Yew has done a great job there, but Singapore also has its limits. They really think that they can forecast the future rather than create the future. And part of true cost economics is creating the future rather than trying to forecast what all the other morons are going to do.
Which seems like that's all what's happening right now.
Yeah.
In this part of the world.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, sir.
What can we do to smash the stranglehold from the Commission on Presidential Debates on the presidential debate?
That's a very good question, because the League of Women Voters lost their integrity.
Right.
They lost the presidential debates because they had the temerity to ask questions that were not provided beforehand and to include 30-party candidates. Had they had integrity, they would have said there will be no sex in America until we get the debates back.
That was the strata strategy.
And fuck you very much, okay? But they weren't willing to do this. I mean, you know.
It's a strategy of Lysistrata by Aristophanes. There's a Greek play that where the women withheld their intimacy, and it worked.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot to it. You know, life goes round. But the League of Women Voters lost their integrity. I mean, if I had been their president, I would have raised holy hell. And unfortunately, they chose to go along with it. And I'm sure it was accompanied by some large donations and some side deals, but they lost their integrity. Now, one of the things that is starting to happen, I mean, there's this Christina Tobin, I think, Fair and Free Elections. She ran some parallel debates this last time around.
Because we got coverage, you know, that's the question.
Well, but she didn't do it completely right. For example, Andre Barnett was the selection of the Reform Party, and she didn't include him. And I don't know whether she's prejudiced against black bodybuilders or just the Reform Party. But she failed to have integrity on that one point. But I love her. I think she's a shining example of real potential for this country. One of the things that needs to happen is the public needs to be confronted with the hypocrisy of our system. And that's not going to happen if you rely on the New York Times and the Washington Post. I mean, back when I was a minor millionaire, I put $10,000 into a pot, and there were several of us that were trying to pay $100,000 for full-page ads in the L.A. Times, the New York Times, and the Washington Post, and our money was refused. Remember how the Dixie Chicks were treated? Well, our money was refused because we were trying to do an unpatriotic ad, never mind that we were trying to tell the public the truth. So we have an issue, and one of the things I'm thinking about with this open source everything hub is the media has lost it. I mean, the media is now Murdoch. And I actually got to the Time editorial level in the 1990s suggesting that they become a public intelligence agency, Time magazine. And they didn't want to do it, and in part they were afraid that it meant they would have to cover everything always, whereas in fact, with intelligence, you do gap-driven collection if you're smart. We're not smart. But there are ways to do it. There are ways to distribute the responsibilities. And I think we're at a point right now where book publishing and the media industry and professional associations are all collapsing.
Right. The credibility of the old media is on the decline.
It's not just the credibility of the media. It's the credibility of professional journals.
Sure.
Especially in the medical and pharmaceutical industries. You can no longer rely on those. And so I think we're getting close to a point, we're not there yet, we're getting close to a point where truth will be valuable. And it will be possible to monetize a truthful answer. But we're not there yet.
Okay, different question. You said you supported the draft as a socializing function.
I think you should also learn how to kill.
Yeah, probably a good skill for everyone to have. There are other socializing institutions.
Such as?
Well, even public education. I'm not saying it does a good job, but I'm saying it is a socializing.
It does a very good job of creating morons.
Well, I guess it achieves its intended objective, right? But wouldn't you consider the draft to be more like involuntary servitude? I mean, I think it's slavery.
Well, no, it depends. I mean, we're all slaves right now. And I see the draft as a way of making sure that we don't go to war without the middle class being in agreement. That, for me, is the fundamental purpose of the draft, apart from socialization. War has to be something that the nation agrees on. It cannot be something where you're sending basically people who can't get jobs, who are cannon fodder, and who are essentially cosmetic fronts for spending vast amounts of money on technology that does not work as advertised, and that should not be paid for with the taxpayer dollar or worse with borrowed money.
I mean, we're not supposed to have a standing army anyway, right? According to the Constitution.
Well, that's a very good point, and I think that one of the big, I mean, I first off, the U.S. Army War College and the U.S. Army Strategic Studies Institute does some really good thinking, and back in the 1990s, we totally surveyed this and we created a concept for four forces after next. You need a big war force that has to be able to go to war on a moment's notice, and that has to be fully manned, but it's a small force. Then you have a small war force, and that force has a cadre of full-time personnel, but a vast number of reservists, particularly reservists in the civil affairs and other stabilization, reconstruction, kind of revolutionary condition things. Then you have a peace force, which is almost totally reserved. And it's a 90-day in-and-out kind of force, okay, where you go into Haiti and you go into Somalia and stuff, and you create water points and all these other things. And then finally you have a Homeland Defense Force, which includes stopping illegal aliens and massive counterintelligence against our own internal enemies. But nobody wanted to do that because, again, remember that the infantry is 1% of the budget. Right now, the military budget is about spending money on shit that doesn't work, that's very, very expensive. For me, the draft, I mean, do not misunderstand my affection for the military and the U.S. government. I mean, they are both very, very important institutions that are just Swiss cheese corruption right now.
All right. So following up on spending money on shit that doesn't work, I've noticed a big rise in tunnel warfare in Syria recently on part of the FSA, and I know you'd mentioned the extreme effectiveness of Kuchi tunnels in Vietnam before. I'm curious if you think subterranean warfare is going to continue to kind of take off, and if you think we're as ill-prepared for it as we were with tunnel rats in Vietnam, aside from a couple bunker busters.
I'm sure we've made some advances in subterranean detection. I'm not familiar with it, but there, I mean, I just do not underestimate the capacity of human beings who are highly motivated to do things that are just amazing. And I also, yeah.
Would that include deep underground military bases, getting back into the tinfoil hat territory?
Well, I don't think it's tinfoil hat territory at all. I mean, I think there are massive underground installations across the United States of America.
Possibly dug with nuclear subterraneans, or are we getting too far afield?
No, it just, excuse me, far afield in this room? I'm not following Syria, but what I find interesting is that we're actually thinking about having common cause with Iran. Again, Israel and Saudi Arabia are two of the greatest destabilizing forces on the planet. A Zionist Israel, not my loyal American Jews, less those that say shiksas don't count, you know, which is where I really got to understand the philosophy. More shiksas do count? No, they don't count. Okay, never mind. We should be concentrating on creating a prosperous world of peace. That's the only... Oh, bless you. Thank you. All right. Caffeine-free? Are you out of your fucking mind? That's right. He was blind at the time. Anyway, thank you. I mean, I'm glad to lubricate my throat, but I'm going to have to pee at some point. We should, you know... The profit from peace is extraordinary. And it just kills me that we're literally committing national suicide. I mean, there's a great book, National Suicide A to Z. We're committing national suicide. And I don't know how to get out of it. I feel very helpless. And I only come here to be with other helpless people. Support group. Yes, exactly. All right, shall we call it a night, or are there more questions? Oh, I won't stop. I mean, you, please.
Just a quick question on what you think is going on in Ukraine. Do you have any...
Oh, yes. The Israeli covert action with the decomposing bodies. I have... Yeah, what? Oh, he woke up. Okay. Let's unpack this. First off, when the first Malaysian airliner went down in Asia, we found a duplicate in a hangar in Tel Aviv. Okay? No. In Tel Aviv. The Israelis had a Malaysian airliner stashed in Tel Aviv. There are photographs of it. Okay. No, but it was a duplicate plane with the Malaysian paint job, the whole nine yards. Okay? And we're still not sure what happened, but I have over 100. You'll notice my name is never associated with insanity. I have over 100 contributing editors, and one of them, Owl, is particularly good at this stuff. And Owl has just posted two items on the Malaysian-Ukraine thing, okay? The Malaysian shootdown occurred 3 hours prior to the Israelis' latest invasion of Gaza, where they're killing kids, okay? And NBC just pulled a reporter that had the temerity to report on Israelis killing kids, all right? So we're as corrupt and complicit as anyone. Right now, the preliminary impression is that this was a fake accident, that the people at the Dutch airport were just hired, and there were no tears, there was no anxiety. It was just like a bunch of people standing around. The bodies appear to have been decomposing for several days. The passports are immaculate. And I've cleaned up after aircraft accidents. And you have body parts and luggage and panties and everything, okay, all over the landscape. This looks like a dumped job, just like Pennsylvania. And so from where I sit, there is ample evidence that this was, in fact, a covert action, and it was not shot down by the separatists. It was probably shot down by missiles bought by the Ukrainian Jew, who is a multi-billionaire, who is basically collaborating. So, you know, I don't know one way or the other. I have no agenda in this fight other than I would like the United States to stay the hell out of it. And so I don't know one way or the other. What I do know is I cannot rely on the U.S. media or the U.S. government to tell me the truth or to even find the truth. Okay, so that's where I'll stop. On that one. Another question? Yes, sir.
So I get from your talk that you do have a special interest in India. I'm from India, and I was there during the 2008 terrorist attack in Mumbai. And
planned and organized by the Pakistani ISI with help and funding from the CIA?
Pretty much... where I was getting to, but is that, could you kind of shine a little more light than...
Your pain.
Because it seemed, what do you think of...
We're promoting terrorism. I mean, in Vietnam, we were bombing fucking Jewish monasteries. And we were supporting a Catholic Mandarin. We do all kinds of stupid shit for the same reason Clinton got a blowjob. Because we could. Okay? I mean, really, we do stupid shit that has no adult oversight. There's no explaining this. Now, if I were India, I would be a little more aggressive with my counterintelligence. I think India does some really good things, and I would love to help the Indian intelligence community. Part of it is being able to account for everybody. And part of it is to do a better job of watching American money. So what's your question at this point?
Well, I think you kind of answered it, but I think it led to something else. Now that you spoke about Indian intelligence, isn't Indian intelligence one of the best sources of intel within Afghanistan for the U.S.?
Part of the problem is the U.S. has been in love with Pakistan. And it's had a love-hate relationship with India. And I'm not really as familiar with this as I could be or should be. And so I don't want to give the impression I have any kind of authoritative answer. But on balance, I think the Americans are desperately reliant on Pakistani lies. And they're not listening to India enough. And also in our State Department, we have factions. And in our State Department right now, we have a faction that's been trying to throw Ghani under the bus and deliver the election to Abdullah. This is the Holbrooke Dobbins thing, and Dobbins just got fired for being an idiot. So part of the problem with the U.S. government is it lacks integrity in how it collects information and uses information and makes decisions. And poor Obama. Obama doesn't have a central intelligence agency he can rely on. Well, you know, if there's one thing I agree with John Brannon on, it's that we should eliminate the DNI. We should just close down the DNI, get rid of it. That's been a mistake. But I would like to see, I'll tell you, I think of India as the brain housing group for the BRICS. And I think India could do vastly more than it is doing now. Now, it's not for me to be critical, because India is the most complicated country on the planet. And it has done really, really well, from what I can tell. But it can do better. For example, Richard Stallman has told me that India has listened to him about open source in the universities. But what's holding them back from open source everything? I mean, my goal would be for India to not buy a single fucking thing from the United States in the next 5 years, and actually learn how to produce all this stuff and make it open source. I don't have any opinions other than that I would really love to create something in London that then explodes toward India.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Yes, sir. Are we going to be here for much longer? I mean, should I, like, go pee and then come back ready to do another hour? Or?
Well, take my... Yeah.
Okay, all right. Then let me do your question, and then I'll do a quick two-minute break, and then I'll come back.
Well, I got two questions.
Oh, you have two questions.
So go to the bathroom. Take your time. You've earned it. You've earned it.
All right, I'd like to ask you all to come forward and hold hands. Just kidding. All right, we're going to get a question about Fukushima, but where's my young man that had two questions? Okay.
So a few times this evening you've mentioned the unemployment problem.
22.4%, according to shadowstats.com.
As I look at the world, I think we've gotten to a point that we don't need as many people to produce the goods and services
right.
as we have. What would you do about that?
I would give them all free education.
How does that help if there's no job for them to go to?
They're going
to
create their own jobs. First off, let me point out that I mean, I love this book, 1491. And if I mention a book, I've done a review, and you can go read the summary. But 1491 pointed out that the average Mayan male with a family of five worked 60 days a year. That was it. And the rest of the time he was doing artsy craftsy shit. Okay. Huh? Yes, sir.
Oh, no. I'm going to give this back. I won't need it. Okay, but thank you for the thought.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Yes, sir.
This is just a theoretical question.
Go. Oh, okay.
Okay. You voice your complaint about how Occupy ended up. What are your thoughts about the idea?
Yeah, get closer to the microphone, mostly because this is also being recorded and streamed.
What are your thoughts about the idea that Occupy was purposely triggered as a social experiment to see if they could put it down?
Fascinating.
Right, that it was used to test the fusion centers across the nation as a way to control an activist movement.
That's utterly fascinating. And I wouldn't put it past the Department of Homeland Security to be that smart. I mean, I consider Boston to have been a fraud. I consider Boston to have been an experiment at an entire lockdown for a city. and all of the victims to have been fake. One of the truth tellers in Boston for me as an analyst was that when all the rabbis and priests rushed to comfort the wounded, they weren't allowed to get near them in the Boston bombings. So rabbis, priests, you know, first thing they do is grab their holy oil and say, God damn, I got to go out and anoint these dudes. All right. And the cops would not let them get near any victim. And one of the amputees in Boston, I don't think there were. There were, in fact, the triage in the hospital, they only had six people. And the amputee that was the whole big thing was completely dissected and then was found to be an actor who worked for a company that specializes in providing amputees to battlefield simulation exercises. Okay. All right. Now, coming back to you, I think that's a fascinating idea. I think it's utterly, utterly plausible and possible. Occupy may well have been intended to fail. And if so, we should take lessons from it. But yeah, I don't have any problem with that possibility. Any follow up or? You look awfully clean cut to be following me. I mean, I've been thinking to myself, this is the FBI guy. But, all right, well, I'm glad you've been following me for years. I still haven't been arrested.
So my question is for you, okay, you advocate peace.
Right.
Right? You advocate peace, but...
nonviolent love as often as possible.
Right? And you say a general strike is probably the way to go.
Right.
As a former Marine officer, why aren't you the leader?
Because nobody wants me to be.
You attempted it?
Well, I ran for president. I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, there's some people that say I can alienate an inanimate object in the next room, you know, depending on its intelligence level. I mean, I did try and run for president, and my sole purpose in running for president was to try and get people to come together. And not a single one of the small parties was willing to listen to me. And independentvoting.org, I'm convinced, is a Bloomberg front that is there to keep the independents quiet. So, I'm a failure as a leader.
The populace knows that an independent will fail, but the population, if they rally around somebody, who actually is going to be the focal point of a movement.
And when I say a focal point of a movement, if I were to be hacked into the public consciousness, which I mean, you'd be amazed at how many stories about me have been spiked. I mean, Associated Press sent a photographer to do me in Rome, and it was going to be a big deal, and that story never made it out. If I were the leader, my point would be to implement all the ideas at BigBatUSA.org, which is a coalition cabinet. I mean, one of the things that has been very beneficial to my life this last 10 years has been paying attention to Tom Antley. And he wrote The Tao of Democracy. He's one of the leaders of the collective intelligence movement. Because of him, I published a book called Collective Intelligence, Creating a Prosperous World at Peace with 55 authors, including Paul Martin, former Prime Minister of Canada. As best I can tell, until I get on the college circuit and until I get out, I mean, I would be willing, $10,000 a month keeps my wife quiet and allows me to get on the road. Okay, and if someone can come up with $10,000 a month, I'm on the road for the next 2 years. But it's like trying to break in. You know, I've tried to break in with speakers bureaus. I've tried to get myself to campus organizations that are interested in stuff. And I guess there's just a disconnect. I mean, maybe I'm just a little bit too weird for them to accept me as a circulating speaker. I mean, I love it that you guys, all 23 of you, appreciate me. But I'm not. What I'm selling isn't being bought. And so I don't know what the answer is. But I do believe that there might come a time when I could become more useful if there were a larger movement. And it's a movement that has to be based on respect for everybody's point of view and making decisions on the basis of facts. And I think that's the one thing people can agree on, is that fact-based decision-making is a good thing. So I feel helpless. I mean, I really feel marginalized. And it's sad because $10,000 a month is chump change in terms of getting someone out there raising hell. And I do have a qualified nonprofit, except it can't do political stuff, you know. So I would have to go to a 401, 5014. What is it? What's the political? Not a 501c3 is what I am now. And I had a benefactor that gave me $20,000 last month, which is why I could afford to come here and give my wife $10,000. Yeah, well, you know, it's tough. I mean, she's pissed at me for being unemployed for 6 years. And it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, I can't even get hired as a night manager at Popeyes because I have no food service experience. And I tried Lowe's. I was a night receiving clerk at Lowe's. Good people work at night at Lowe's. Yeah, I am serious, but my feet and my hands exploded. I couldn't last more than 10 days. Let me take some more questions, but thank you for the seriousness of your questions. And I'm easy to find online, and if anyone can mobilize a movement that wants me, I'm there. But I think going to London and doing the open source hub, although I'd rather do the open source hub here in New York City. I mean, I tried to get NYU and a couple of others interested, but what I'm finding is the college presidents will not pay attention to you unless you have a really wealthy donor that says that they'll give them $20 million to sit down and listen. So it's tough, but New York would actually be a very good place to do this.
Two thoughts. One, for the person that was asking about the population, I remember Soylent Green, but we won't go there because we're past our prime.
You remember what?
The movie Soylent Green. Yeah. You don't worry about it then.
No, I'm sorry. I missed it.
That's okay. My question is about the idea of the open source and, you know, is it perpetuates that. Do we get to open information, and do we get to a point where we have enough open information that maybe we can disband the CIA, FBI, NSA?
Yeah. Oh, look. If I were DNI, I would be eliminating the NSA and the NRO. In fact, I just did a list of a 12-step program for restoring intelligence and integrity to the U.S. government. I would turn CIA into the national technical, or I would turn CIA into the national collection agency, and it would have offices for SIGINT, IMINT, MASINT, and clandestine human. I would have an open source agency, which then sets the gold standard. And the last email I had with Jim Clapper was in 2007, where I explained to him that the open source agency would be the gold standard by which he could judge the return on investment for all of the classified disciplines. That's where I lost him, okay? Because the minute I talked about justifying the return on investment in all the classified technical disciplines, he understood that I was talking about cutting budgets, which is not where he wanted to be. So I would create the open source agency. I would turn the NSA into the National Processing Agency. I mean, one of the things I learned at Liberation Technology, well, fine. You know what? I'm not suicidal, but I wouldn't mind dying for my country. Dark fiber has impressed the shit out of me. Hunter Newby and Allied Fiber and the stuff that's going on here in New York City with dark fiber, I want to put the ISPs out of business. And I really believe in community-owned dark fiber. And I really believe in free Wi-Fi. So I would turn the National Processing Agency into a national dark fiber distribution network. And ultimately, 80 to 90% of our information should be open source. I mean, one of the problems right now is that we're spending all this money collecting classified information through secret means, intrusive secret means, and we're not processing it. At the same time, we're not spending any money at all collecting open source information in 183 languages we don't speak. Okay? which happens to be highly relevant. And one of the things that just came out is that there's a new book out called Poor Economics. And what it talks about is how we don't know anything about Africa because all of the statistics and everything are hosed. But I would turn DIA into the National Analysis Agency. I would actually require that every cabinet be justified based on analysis at the strategic, policy acquisition and tactical levels. I would create a counterintelligence agency that would start with cleaning out the FBI. And we actually need to get serious about counterintelligence. This is the sucking chest wound. If I've learned one thing in pursuing open source initiatives this past 10 years, is that until you get counterintelligence right, everything else is a lie. You have to get counterintelligence right, and we don't do that. So, question over here.
Thank you for taking all this time.
I got nothing else to do.
Enjoyable speeches. Yeah. Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, really. Thank you. I mean, I'm honored that you guys are interested in Spy Improv.
Well,
what's your question?
Well, first, I was wondering if you see alternative or free energy gaining a foothold in major markets in the foreseeable future, maybe in our lifetimes?
Yes, in our lifetimes. I mean, I'm fascinated. The price point on solar is coming down dramatically, and IBM has had a major initiative where it's getting an X factor on the solar. And I think thermal and wave and wind are all coming down. The price points are just nosediving. What's not happening is the communities aren't taking this into their own to develop them. And at the same time, Florida has just made it illegal to be off the grid. I don't make this shit up.
But do you see gaining a major foothold within, just America, for example?
Yeah, but yes, look, see, what it boils down to one village. I mean, if I were in New Hampshire, and now these days, New Hampshire, every house that's built has a generator because they're having so many issues with the centralized energy grid. But, I mean, if I were in New Hampshire, I would be taking every house off the grid, and this whole – I love this open source ecology global village construction set because it turns out that you can, in fact, take all the shit and waste produced by a family of five and turn it into a compost pile, which means you don't need centralized sewage. And you can, in fact, harvest water. In fact, the Dead Sea has been brought back to life by some very creative people that have gone in with the old traditional furrows, and they're capturing every drop of water, and they're now growing figs and lemons in the Dead Sea. So yes, I do see it taking hold, but it has to take hold in a village level. It's isolated, hang together, hang separately. But yes, I do see it taking hold, especially as unemployment goes up. I mean, we're getting to where we can't afford the way we're doing stuff.
I do have another question.
Yes.
How do you see national political spheres of influence changing?
National what?
Spheres of influence changing on a country-by-country level, as in...
Who's coming up and who's going down?
In the next 50 years.
Look, Minister Mentor Lee Kuan Yew is one of the people I really admire, and he said demography, not democracy, is the future. Well, if democracy, not democracy, is the future, it's Brazil, China, India, Indonesia. I throw in Iran because I think Shiites are actually less crazy than Sunnis. Russia, and then some wild cards like Venezuela and Turkey and Malaysia. And Islamic religions play big in that area.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
Do you think Kraft was behind the Boston bombing?
Who?
Kraft.
Whose craft?
The privatized military force that was deployed there?
I think they were employed within the Boston bombing. I don't think they were behind it. I think it was a Department of Homeland Defense citywide exercise.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Yep. Oh, and Fukushima. Somebody was going to ask me a question about Fukushima. When you get here, okay.
Okay, continuity of government question.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Tom Drake gave a talk, NSA whistleblower. And, he said that, well, the rise of the surveillance state after 9/11 was really just the tip of the iceberg, that there were so many other
initiatives undertaken by the Bush-Cheney administration that we still don't know about. And he was hinting at it. He couldn't really get at it. And then Ellsberg, kind of expanded on that and said, well, you know, it really has to do with continuity of government. The Constitution is suspended, and there's a lot of kind of work going on behind the scenes that we don't have insight into.
Well, first off, continuity of government, although it does spend some money, it's actually a relatively frugal program.
Bunkers.
Yeah, well, and rotten bunkers, too. And I don't think continuity of government would actually work. I would place much more emphasis on bottom-up resilience and on alternative communications, and I'd worry more about electromagnetic pulse effects. But in every exercise ever run under Dick Cheney, Congress was never constituted. He's absolutely an executive kind of guy. For me, continuity of government is just one other program where money is being spent without accountability. I don't see it as evil in an evil sense. It's just another program. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So one of the themes we keep returning to over and over again is how in an open source approach to things, we have more data, and so we make decisions rationally and logically. But one of the other points you've made is that a lot of what's wrong in, for example, the U.S. government is things that are driven ideologically, paralleling what Mr. Drake had said earlier about how national security becoming sort of religion was the term he used. Ideologues and zealots don't care about data. Alternately, there are numerous different interpretations of data. So how does an open source approach account for or operationally deal with ideology for good or for bad?
There are two books that I would mention. One is Danny Sheehan's book. He was Ellsberg's lawyer, greatest First Amendment lawyer in the country. And he's got a book that's been very badly put together and very badly marketed, but it's a wonderful book called The People's Advocate. And one of the things I learned from that was that Sheehan, when he was at Harvard, he was studying how worldviews are embedded in people. And this ties into another book, Will Durant's 1916 graduate thesis, which is called Philosophy and the Social Problem. And that's now available as an excellent, excellent book, and I've written a summary review. And what it all boils down to is you can't resolve your political issues at the adult level unless you resolve your educational issues at the child level. So we have to kidnap all their children and raise them correctly. And so it's a real challenge. I mean, the public school system is a perfect example of doing the wrong thing righter. I mean, I was a substitute teacher at Fairfax County Public Schools for a while. And, you know, it's kind of pathetic because it took them 3 months to figure out who I was. It took their kids less than 2 minutes after I wrote my name on the blackboard. They say, oh, fuck, this guy knows shit. And then they start asking me questions about 9/11, and I'd answer them. You know, so I was eventually told not to come back. I mean, how dare I answer questions from the kids? And they teach the test, and what used to be the normal school curriculum is now called honors, and what used to be honors is now advanced placement. And, you know, it's just the whole thing has been dumbed down and inflated and just totally morphed into largely worthless crap. Which is why I've supported, I mean, one of my kids dropped out, GED'd out. He wasn't going to put up with that shit, and then got himself into Rochester Institute of Technology on scholarship. So now he's part of the San Francisco mob. My second son just kind of faked his way through it, and now he's getting straight A's in college. And my third son is what we would call the anchor man in his high school class. The lowest possible passing grade. So I guess they each took the school in their own way. So we have to education, really, and how we educate people. I think one of the reasons I'm so excited about the handheld and when I paid for the Earth Intelligence Network, we came up with the concept of educating people one cell phone call at a time. And so we basically have to get young people really, really excited about educating themselves and then get out of their way and help them learn what they want on their own. Huh? Well, you know what? I tell you, if I had to do it over again, I'd give serious thought to homeschooling. Because homeschooling is a very efficient way. However, homeschooling is also how a lot of kids are being filled with extreme right biblical idiocy. Well, I'm very happy for them. You had a question?
Oh, no, thank you, sir. Actually, can I just add this? I was a public school teacher for 2 years, and everything you said about the public school system is completely true.
Yeah, no, and I like Gatto's books, you know. I like Gatto's books. All right, one more victim. Oh, wait, no. You've asked a question before?
No.
Okay, all right. You, and then you guys kind of get in and get yourself sorted out. But I won't leave until that line stops.
Okay, thanks for everything this evening, sharing your thoughts. I'm not sure if this is out of scope or what.
There is nothing out of scope. What part of that don't you get?
Okay. I've got some, you know, observations and concerns about the evolution of technology, in particular certain technologies where there's a convergence. I'm thinking about drone technology where the size of the physical size of these things is coming down to a micro-miniaturization scale. And when you project what's happening with that technology and you mix it with the evolution of camera capabilities and you tie that in with facial recognition and the ability to, you know, take a wireless connection and hit a back-end database.
A little bit.
You put all that together, and how do you see the impact of that convergence on the human experience?
E.O. Wilson wrote a book called Consilience, The Unity of Knowledge. And his basic point was why the sciences need the humanities. We are retards when it comes to philosophy and ethics. And unfortunately, we've allowed science to develop in ways that are out of control. And we have completely lost sight of the precautionary principle. We've completely lost sight of community consensus on how to use technology. And so my basic bottom line here is that the sciences have developed without the maturation of the humanities that are needed to consider that. And again, true cost economics comes into play here. The reason I'm so excited about true cost economics, there's J.C. Liskowitz, who used to be based in New York. He did a one-year study on the true cost of a cotton T-shirt. And we briefed that here a few years ago. And it includes X gallons of water and X grams of fuel and toxins and child labor and all of this stuff. So one of the things that gets me excited is the idea that eventually, we're going to be able to show the public the true cost of every product, service, behavior, and that is going to have a market-changing effect. For example, if and when the public becomes conscious of the fact that Nestle and Coca-Cola are basically sucking the aquifers dry in order to sell this shit, which I should not be drinking, then it will change how people view these.
Will it be too late by the time that there are millions of micro drones that are able to enter buildings where you would think you would have privacy? And we could be overwhelmed.
I don't know. I mean, you don't have privacy from Apple now. There's all kinds of issues. I honestly don't know what the answer is. However, I have a lot of faith in humans, and I have a lot of faith in the ability of the industrial complex to fuck it up. So I'm less worried about that, but it will be interesting to find out. I mean, eventually we may have to build community-based mesh networks that zap micro-drones like flies.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I was wondering if you have any thoughts on why they legalized weed in Colorado.
why they legalized weed in Colorado. It's fucking about time. Look, I appeared in a movie called The Last White Hope, and it was about CIA smuggling billions of dollars worth of cocaine into the United States through its Nicaraguan guy. And then Ricky Ross was just a self-made millionaire. And what I said in that movie, which was, God, 7 years ago or whatever, I said marijuana is right at the seam between government because I told you so and common sense of the public. Okay? Marijuana, as best I know, I still haven't smoked it because I still have clearances and I still hope one day to have something to say about the future of the U.S. intelligence community. So that's a small price that I have to pay. But as best I can tell, marijuana is not only good for you, but by decriminalizing it, you're creating revenue opportunities and community stabilization and a whole bunch of good things. And I see no problem with it. And I believe that 27 states now have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes. And I expect that to sweep across the country. My obvious concern as a parent is would it lead to ecstasy and other variations and so forth. And as best I can tell, it's not doing that. So I'm glad for Colorado. And I'm absolutely glad that Colorado is proving to be a poster child for why marijuana should be legalized. Yes, sir.
You mentioned Indonesia before. Them being the third largest democracy, what do you think this the most recent elections?
I don't know.
Do for us?
I haven't been in Indonesia. I haven't been paying attention. But I think Indonesia has enormous potential. I also think Singapore is going to expand, and I'd like to see a new economic zone that builds out. And if I were advising the Singapore government, I would be offering China a military naval base on that. There's a nice portion of Indonesia that's ideally – I would close the Malacca Straits. I'd build a canal across the isthmus up north. And I would close the Malacca Straits to major traffic. And I would turn that into an economic maritime tourism eco zone. But I would give the Chinese a military base to kind of pay for all of that. Anyway, I'm very impressed by Indonesia. And I think Indonesia is an example of Islam and the state being well suited to one another. I also remember the Indonesian president that told people to send him an email if they wanted to report corruption, and he got 3 million emails. So that was good. Yes, sir.
Yeah, quick Fukushima.
Yeah, Fukushima.
What do you think of it?
It didn't happen. It was, oh, come on. I'm just playing with you. There's a possibility that Fukushima was caused by the Zionist Israeli government. But the bottom line here is that we are so grossly irresponsible around the world with respect to nuclear power. Most nuclear plants being located in floodable zones. Fukushima is a classic, regardless of whether or not there was sabotage. Fukushima is a classic example of both the Japanese and the American governments essentially lying to everybody and failing to put the resources in. Now, my understanding, and if you look up Fukushima and Phi Beta Iota, you'll get to all the posts by the various contributing editors. Apparently, China has a whole bunch of what are called ghost cities. And apparently Japan was negotiating with China at one point, which surprised me because, I mean, I think the Chinese consider the Japanese the lowest form of scum on earth. But apparently Japan was negotiating to move 40 million people. And I don't know how it's going to turn out. But Fukushima for me is a case study. It's like a Katrina on steroids. It's a case study in irresponsibility and deception and the inability of the public to rely on information from all of the so-called traditional sources. Now, I think Fukushima today would be a very interesting place to apply a crisis mapper's approach and to actually get micro data and make that public. But unfortunately, we're still at a point where the larger public won't pay attention even if the information is available. There's a wonderful book called Fog Facts, and it's a book about information that's known but not acknowledged. So Fukushima, we'll have more. I mean, I'm waiting for a nuclear disaster in the U.S. We'll have more of those. Now, what I don't have a good appreciation of how much damage it's done to the Pacific Ocean. It appears that the damage is less than was initially believed to be coming. Yes, sir.
So Edward Snowden seems to have picked an exclusive group of journalists to work with.
Picked journalists.
In the form of specifically kind of picking Glenn Greenwald as the man to get his message out.
I have no idea how he made his choice.
So my question is kind of, what is your opinion on why he wouldn't just release the leaks in the form of...
I can't hear you.
The form of why he wouldn't release the leaks as just kind of a bulk transfer of data as opposed to kind of trickling these out to select media personnel.
Snowden has handled himself with extraordinary maturity.
It's like he's got a PR firm behind him.
It really does. And look, and I'll tell you something. CIA is not that good at covert actions. And so I'm not necessarily ready to conclude that this is a CIA job. Now, it could be CIA plus Goldman Sachs plus the Mossad, okay, because NSA may have been blackmailing and doing bad things against Wall Street, and it may be that NSA or a portion of NSA finally terrified a portion of Wall Street as well as Obama, and they may have basically all come together. Because Snowden has been operating at a level of perfection far beyond any that I can comprehend from any normal human being, and certainly one lacking in the advanced education and so forth. So having said that, all I can say is that the benefits have been stunningly good. And I must say that meeting his parents here took my appreciation of Snowden another 20%. I mean, I started at 50. I'm now at 90% in terms of appreciating Snowden and what he's done. And that last 10% is my questions about who exactly is behind him.
Do you feel he's learned from kind of the failures of WikiLeaks just dumping a massive amount of data and having the public kind of parse through it as opposed to
I'm not sure he was that thoughtful about it. I just think Snowden has been a very carefully calibrated operation. And I mentioned to his parents that there were rumors in my circles about this being a CIA operation, and his mother stopped speaking to me.
Really? That's a bit telling.
Well, it may not be as telling as it could be, but I think I scared her a little bit. And so I'm not going to worry about it. I like his parents. And on the strength of liking his parents, I give him more credit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Snowden thing has been driving me crazy.
We're going to have to retire you from questions. All right, this is your last question.
I forgot what I was going to ask.
Do you want to think about it while he asks another question?
No, I don't. Actually.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to come back at you with the Snowden stuff, with the CIA stuff, because I really think there is a CIA involvement with Snowden controlling him and pushing him.
It's not that hard to rendition people out of Hong Kong, and he survived that.
Right, and I don't want to regurgitate stuff and whatever. I know there's such a huge audience here that probably have heard this, but whatever. My question was this time was the election, 2016 election. What do you think? Is it really going to be Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, or is it going to be somebody else?
Well, that is a very good question. I don't think Hillary is electable. I think she has on the one hand had too many issues with Benghazi, on the other hand had too many issues with failure to perform. She's looking very old and feeble. What's that? Well, Hillary has her own Monica.
What's her name?
So, you know, I just think that it's not going to happen. Now, Jeb Bush supposedly was going to be the candidate in this last election. They were going to do a convention deadlock, and he was going to come forward. God help this country if we allow a third Bush into the system. What's that? Well, you know, I thought Dick Cheney was the last straw, and then we got Obama. And then I thought Obama was the last straw, and so now we're going to get someone else. There's going to have to come a point where people literally refuse to countenance a two-party tyranny election. I don't know when that point will come. Certainly, I believe that Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich could have taken it in 2012. And I believe that there's still time to make 2014 a litmus test for electoral reform and to elect a coalition government. I mean, what we need now is a government of, by, and for we the people. And somebody should be able to put that together. I know how to do it, but I don't have anyone that's listening to me. So it's a problem. So, all right, you're retired, and next guy. I know that, but I'm going to go on strike. No more questions from you. Yes, sir.
So I have two questions. I guess my first one is, could you speak at all to the American involvement in Stuxnet?
In what?
Stuxnet?
Oh, Stunek. I think we rode the Israelis. I think the Israelis did that.
Oh, okay.
All right. And I don't think we did it.
Okay.
What? It got out. Look, my bottom line on stuff like that is we're generally not smart enough to get it right within the government, and we're generally dumb enough to let it get out of the bag and go in directions we have no clue it will go in. So I think the Israelis did it for their own purposes, and then we made it worse. It's just my bottom line.
And then my second question is, what do you think about like the oversight with JSOC and all of the kill list stuff in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, first off, I love the JSOC guys. I think they're really decent human beings, and I think the SEALs were seriously pissed off at finding out that the bin Laden they killed was a fraud. What I've been told is that JSOC guys at the line level are very angry, because they don't like killing bus drivers for no good reason. The targeting has just gotten insane. CIA is out of control. I mean, I was able to get an email to Brennan before he left the White House, and I said, for God's sakes, cancel the drone program and get back in the business of decision support. And Brennan I just can't explain it. I mean, for all his limitations, he could have been a great director of CIA, but he chose not to be. He chose to just let the system keep going. The drone program should not be at CIA. In fact, it shouldn't even exist. Drones are an excellent clandestine observation device, and they're a wonderful way of achieving things for imagery and reconnaissance that we cannot do with satellites. They should not be used to kill people. That should be one guy with a stiletto. Again, the whole bin Laden raid, that should have been five guys with silencers coming out of a safe house. Blackwater was blown in Atabad a year beforehand, and there have been at least six bin Ladens. I'm pretty sure bin Laden died in 2001. And Deputy Secretary of State Steve Pesniak is on record as that. If you want to have a good time, go to Phi Beta Iota and look up the bin Laden story. There are 90 entries there, including photos of the six bin Ladens. So another question. Yes, sir.
So how real a threat is North Korea? And let me complete my question on that because it will sound ridiculous. Some of the stuff that we already hear about on a day-to-day basis is either bullshit or just something that's fed to us. I mean specifically in terms of allowing other countries that may or may not be friendly with the U.S. or anybody else in the world to exchange technologies that are restricted. Example, Pakistan got the missile technology from North Korea in return for nuclear technology, and that's how Pakistan was able to create a nuclear missile which could reach India. So in those contexts, how in today, in 2014, how much of a threat is North Korea in being enablers of that kind of stuff? And, I mean, do you consider the regime in North Korea to be a puppet regime that's either remote controlled by the Chinese or maybe even somebody in the West?
Well, that's a, I'm not expert in this area. I just have impressions. Impression number one is that the United States is the greatest proliferator of nuclear and other technologies. I mean, we gave the Iranians, the CIA gave the Iranians the plans for building a nuclear bomb. It had three little mistakes in it that they caught within hours. Okay. CIA has also been instrumental in helping Pakistan with the nuclear program. Brzezinski basically gave the Pakistanis the complete go-ahead on creating a nuclear capability in return for harassing the Soviets in Afghanistan. So Zbigniew Brzezinski is the father of the Pakistan A-bomb, and he's never been held accountable for that, just like Henry Kissinger has never been held accountable. I mean, Kissinger's a guy who has been quoted in WikiLeaks as saying, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer. And then it says in the State Department cable, laughter. Okay. And these people are war criminals. But they're not held accountable. Nobody holds us accountable for the mistakes we make. I'm not sure what to think of North Korea. I mean, you know, it's kind of like East Germany at a very low level. And East Germany eventually fell. And I think North Korea will fall to South Korea's goodness. I mean, South Korea really has used education to leapfrog into a major economy. I don't know where we are in terms of getting North Koreans the ability to connect to the Internet with or without their government's permission. But eventually, I think North Korea will open up. I think Cuba will open up. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about North Korea. Other than as a place where really insane bad things happen. Non-state actors getting nukes in the future. Yeah. One of the things about law enforcement is it only works if you can keep the portion of crazies to about 10%, okay? I mean, once you start going past that, you lose it, okay? And so one of the reasons I believe in good governance is because I know that we've got a certain threshold below which everything goes to shit, and we're there. Non-state actors have the capacity to do great, great evil. And unfortunately, state actors are doing great, great evil and not being held accountable. I mean, the United States of America is not being held accountable for all of the evil that it is doing in our name. And that troubles me. Because there's a T-shirt on sale at Dulles Airport saying, I love my country, but I'm really concerned about my government. People are buying this T-shirt because it captures the dichotomy. The Constitution and the idea that is America on one hand, and a government in which all three branches are out of control and no longer represent we the people. So, another question, yes.
As you did sort of the
Use the microphone because we're taping.
Actually, I prefer to be off the record, though. But
well then,
sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Did they stop the camera here, and that one's only facing there, so it's okay.
Okay.
So is the North Korean regime a puppet regime that's being controlled by China or something?
I don't think it's being controlled by China.
Or any other?
I mean, there's always the rumors that the Rothschilds are using it, you know, for their own purposes. I don't know. But China, for me, China has been a very good moderating influence on the North Koreans. And China specifically does not want North Korean refugees. I mean, they have put into steps a really good program to basically say, you fuck this up, it's your problem. I don't know. Yes, sir.
So I'm just going to thank you every time I come up here.
Please don't.
I think this is awesome. Thank you. What are your takes on Manchurian candidates' mind control? It's not very often I get to talk to a CIA agent. I got to throw it all out.
I am a Manchurian candidate.
At least on the research and the topic, whether it's...
Look, there's no question. I mean...
Trying to keep your security clearance?
No. Look, listen, God bless... Actually, I got it back, although I can't get a job. Look, if the day comes when I'm appointed to be anything, Director of National Intelligence, Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, I will have no fucking problem getting my clearance back. Okay? I'm purer than Caesar's wife. And I richly deserve to have a clearance. But coming back to this whole Manchurian thing, there are different kinds of Manchurian candidates. I mean, there's the Larry Summers kind of Manchurian candidate. And then there's the Rubin kind of Manchurian candidate. And then there's the Clinton kind of Manchurian candidate. The George Bush kind of Manchurian candidate. I think that the more important question is not whether someone is being controlled in terms of their mind in a Manchurian candidate kind of sense, but rather what Ellsberg really focused on today, which is, and Chomsky, the manufacture of consent. Because what we have done is we have created a government and a society in which treason is a daily occurrence and everybody stands idly by while it happens. And so I think that is the mind control that is really killing us. I'm not worried about singleton Manchurian candidates. I'm worried about an entire fucking government in which everybody is complicit with enormous crimes against the Republic and humanity.
So what are your opinions on the environmental impact, if there are any, with HAARP, if it does exist and it's active?
Oh, I believe HAARP does exist. I believe HAARP is doing some evil things. I believe we are doing weather modification. I believe we are using weather as a weapon. And I believe that that's another counterintelligence issue. One of the things I certainly would want my new counterintelligence agency to focus on is everything that is being done off budget and out of the entire process of oversight.
Well, he actually brought up an interesting point. The news told him it was shut down.
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know myself.
You know, he said it to me. It's been in the news, apparently. I don't know if you
read. And you
read.
Believe the news.
That's exactly what I just said to him.
I doubt it.
Word for word.
Yeah, I doubt it. I doubt it. Listen, U.S. programs are never shut down. They are always increased in funding. Okay, another question.
Yes. What do you believe with...
I meant from someone else, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I only have two more.
All right.
The second one leads into his, so... What do you believe are the risks of the Chinese firewall moving and implementing in other countries? Do you think it's a plausibility or do you, you know, a management of crisis, so to speak, if other countries adopt certain things? What can we do to stop it? Or even do you think it could be stopped?
Well,
Or is it going on now and we just don't understand or we don't see what we don't see? Out of sight, out of mind.
I think that many governments will try and implement Google-like firewalls and accommodations. And if I am empowered to create an open source everything hub, it will be my fondest wish to create. I actually have a slide that I'm going to go back and look up. It's the liberation technology slide. When the Arab Spring happened, some absolutely wonderful workarounds were developed. And I think we have to get to the point where a person with an appropriately equipped open source handheld can get, I mean, there's a thing that sells for $269 right now that will turn any cell phone. No, actually, there's a thing that sells for about $169 that will turn any cell phone into a satellite phone. There's another thing that for $259 you can actually tweet from anywhere in the world. And this is really important. If you're an offshore sailor and you're in the middle of the Atlantic, I can tweet my coordinates to Lee Chesnow, who's back on land, and he can say, run like hell in this direction. Okay, and so that's a really cool internet capability. Bottom line is I think that this group of hackers specifically, but all people who care about the future of humanity should be working toward an uncensorable anonymous internet as a human foundation. So governments are retarded. I mean, governments basically are industrial era. They're at the end of their life. If you look at the eight information tribes or networks, governments are the least informed and the least competent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what are your thoughts on...
Let's agree that we'll stop at four.
Okay. Agreed. So what are your thoughts on Chinese APT groups and potentially...
On Chinese what?
Advanced Persistent Threat Groups. Like hacking.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you with the other conversations going on.
Either Chinese-sponsored government hacking operations...
Oh!
...and or different mercenary hacking groups that do these operations.
Yeah, well, first off, the Chinese have a lot of Chinese. I mean, they graduate more honor graduates out of high school than we graduate out of high school. Okay? I mean, there's a lot of these guys. And second, we make it easy for them. I mean, look, one of the problems, and I had this in my first book, NSA was given the responsibility in 1994 of protecting U.S. computing and communications, and instead they sabotaged it. And I just published an article in Counterpunch called On Defense Intelligence, Seven Strikes. And in that, I hold Mike Vickers, the current Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, accountable. It was under Vickers that NSA destroyed the integrity of U.S. commercial communications and computing. All right? I mean, with friends like this, who needs enemies? So I think China does what it does because we make it easy. Now, John Fialka wrote an excellent book, War by Other Means, and industrial espionage and electronic espionage has been going on for a very long time. My sadness is that I don't think there's a lot that's worth stealing anymore. I think we've lost the innovation edge. And we really should be concentrating on getting our groove back rather than, you know, all this stuff.
So we hear about that stuff a lot in the news, and it's often uncovered, right? Like
it's entertainment.
Well, yeah, and it's obvious too, right?
It's, you know, blame it on the Chinese is the standard running joke.
Potentially, yeah. There's some good evidence out there too. But the question, my next question is, what about American APT groups and Advanced Persistent Threat Groups, like military hacking of other economic organizations or government organizations, and why don't we hear about that?
I mean, I'm astonished at the idiocy of the U.S. media.
And not like man in the middle in communications, but active compromise of computer networks.
Well, you know, when I opened this conference in 1994, one of the conversations we were having was how easy it was to find bugs in commercial computers and stuff. And I made the suggestion that hackers consider themselves to be like citizen intelligence minutemen. And when they found a bug, they should report it to the company and give them 30 days. And if the bug hasn't been fixed in 30 days, the bug is publicized. And we didn't actually go in that direction. We monetized the bugs. So you do what you do. I am so uninterested in negative hacking. And I am so interested in positive hacking. Yeah, but I could give a shit, too. I mean, what we should be hacking is devices that are impervious to Apple or Google or NSA or the Chinese. Well, you can start with a new open source system. Okay, I mean, there's a guy downstairs that was selling open source laptops and open source routers to create mesh networks. What? So screw Intel. Not my problem. There is always an alternative. Okay. Why are you whining? You're whining. There is always an alternative. And if there's an open source hub, by God, I expect you guys to prioritize the gaps. Okay? I mean, a lot of people have said we use BIOS this and BIOS that because it would take too much time and trouble. Okay, well, I got 10,000 guys in India that would be very happy to earn $5 a day unfucking that problem.
Sell it at 300% premium to you. So what is your take on the crisis that unfolded in the beginning of this year with respect to Russia and Crimea? And do you see some kind of reflection or similarity with back in the 60s or 50s when the Soviet Empire was kind of trying to, you know, reach out and grab on to different areas and influence them? I mean, I
others have compared it as payback for Kosovo. I place a lot of stock in geography and ethnicity. And there's no question that Crimea is Russian. And there's no question that the eastern half of the Ukraine is Russian. And there's no question that Putin got this problem, created this problem for himself, because he allowed a really deeply criminal communist regime to go on for too long. And now that criminal communist regime has been replaced by a criminal fascist regime. So Ukraine is a mess. But the United States only makes it worse. I mean, it just breaks my heart to watch John Kerry's haircut talking on TV. I mean, it's embarrassing. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it other than to wish that the United States of America would stay the hell out of other people's affairs. Well, I don't know if we want them more involved in our own. Are you offering me a slice of pizza? All right. I'll take a slice of pizza. Absolutely.
Try to keep you energy. We're only halfway through this month.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's right. And broccoli. I was scared by a large
broccoli.
Take
the broccoli off. That's what I do.
But it doesn't have any meat either.
No, no meat, though.
No, that's right. Don't give the vegetarians their pizza. But thank you. Thank you for your...
I love animals. We got a winner over here.
All right. Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on JTRIG and
on what?
JTRIG and intelligence agencies using disinformation on, you know, things like Reddit, LinkedIn, to try to sway opinion, popular opinion. And do you think that could be this whole Snowden affair could be a part of that?
Well, we have talked about what's my opinion on use of disinformation to sway populations. And part of the problem, I'm opposed to covert actions generally. Because a covert action generally means that you're trying to get another country or another organization or a population group to do something that is absolutely against their best interests and in your best interests. And part of the problem in the United States is we're not smart enough to know what our best interests are. We do things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that are just insane. So the whole idea of I wrote a book on information operations, and I think I brought a case of it here. Information has a value that is rooted in truth. And anything that is disinformation is inherently toxic to the truth.
But it works.
It might work in the short term. I mean, take a look at Afghanistan, okay?
Or Iraq.
Or Iraq. Or Colombia. Mexico. I mean, let's go all the way back to the Mexican-American War, which was an American invasion of Mexico. And we eventually took away everything from the Guadalupe-Hidalgo line down. Okay? Well, guess what? Mexico's got it back. Okay? And so at what price did we tell all these lies? Spanish-American War, based on a lie. You know, lies cost money and blood and treasure and spirit. So from where I sit, disinformation is a disease. And it has a cost, and it is terribly, terribly wrong to resort to disinformation. What we should be doing is recognizing that the truth at any cost lowers all other costs. That's my opinion.
I have a second question. It's not really a question. I just want to hear your thoughts on the Philadelphia experiment and if that has any merit.
What was that, syphilis or...
No, that was electromagnetic fields and boats and people getting caught in them, you know, shit like that. Really? Philadelphia experiment? Come on, bro.
Well, you know, I don't know everything.
This guy.
I mean, and we have done a lot of experimentation on people, including syphilis and things like that. That's wrong. Yes, man. Yes.
Okay. Granted, I've been busy. And put this all together, but from what I've been seeing in a lot of Commonwealth countries, in Europe as well, there's been a lot of shifts politically more to the right, leaning into particularly the fascist groups that have been gaining political party in Europe.
People are scared.
Exactly. I'm just wondering what can be done to try and reverse this, or is this just a pendulum shift that's just going to reverse?
Well, I've thought a lot about the Muslim invasion of Europe and the U.S., and one of the problems is that the Muslim population doesn't seem to assimilate, particularly the radical young men. And I remember that the Spanish edicts kicked both the Jews and the Muslims out. And it was an assimilation problem. Okay? So one of the things I think the governments have failed to do is assimilate people. For example, in Sweden, you basically are put into a language concentration camp for 3 months. And you don't stay if you don't learn Swedish. And I don't want to go that far, but the bottom line is this is all about assimilation and ensuring that the cultural norms are accepted and so forth. So these governments are essentially suffering a blowback of their own irresponsibility. And again, I really want to stress that I think that the illegal immigration problem is a failure of foreign policy. And we've created our own problems.
For what it's worth, I wish I could do something to help at least with the countries where I could vote in.
I don't know. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Following up on that last question, what do you think are the prospects that we'll see fascism in the United States in our lifetimes?
It's already here.
Worse than that, then.
I don't know. There's a split in the United States. I mean, there's the insane South And then there's there's bastions of intelligence and integrity in the Northeast and the Northwest. America is a very divided country. And New York, I'm a son of New York. I was born in New York. And New York's a very interesting state, and it's been a melting pot, but I am not happy with some of the directions that Bloomberg has taken the place with the militarization of the police and the clandestine nonsense that David Cohen has brought in. And, of course, New York spends $75 million a year putting black people in jail for personal marijuana use. So I think fascism is a huge threat. I don't know what the answer is.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
You're killing me.
I know. Slowly. I actually have two questions. One, what do you believe the future of Africa would be, potentially? Or do you believe Africa?
With or without Bill Gates?
That was part of it, the question. What do you think?
I mean, Bill Gates wants a nice, clean Africa with no Africans. Okay, just him and the zebras.
Well, he's already underground. He's already got his whole thing going down over
gonna
there.
Going to eugenics your ass out of here the next time you say thank you.
Well, what do you believe are his plans there, and what do you believe, if we leave him or keep him there, what do you think the future of Africa holds for the world, in my opinion? Do you see it developing? Do you see it kind of... Please don't talk about Ebola.
Well, I'm certainly concerned. On the one hand, population control is a very important topic, but I think you achieve better population control with education than with anything else. I don't know enough about Bill Gates and his eugenics agenda, other than to...
No one does.
Huh?
No one does.
Yeah, other than to be concerned, because apparently there have been some proven instances where vaccines have included sterilization elements. And, of course, Monsanto now is known to be sterilizing animals by the third generation. So there's some real issues here. Can you guys take that conversation outside, please? So, one of the things about Africa, one of the things about the Earth is it's huge. When you fly over Africa, there is plenty of room for everybody. I think Africa has a lot of promise, and so does South America. I mean, Chile, for example, Chile could be producing free energy for all of Latin America if it harvested ocean and geothermal energy. At solar. I mean, Chile has everything, but they're not doing it. But my bottom line is innovation comes from diversity. Diversity comes from numbers, and we're losing it. We're losing out.
But you say that about Chile. They're not Chile, or at least in raw materials, is not technically squandering anything by not producing anything. You know what I'm saying?
I want them to produce free energy.
I'm sure they do too, and I would support them as well. I'll sign a little petition for them to do it. I'm just saying. In Africa.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But more importantly, in Africa, they are squandering their natural resource or the raw material resources that will deplete one day, and there's not really being anything done with the infrastructure. And I wanted to know if you thought, within the political geoscope of the area, what would the nature of that be if we were now not taking – if we're taking Bill Gates out of the equation currently?
Well, it's not just Bill Gates. You've got to take the World Bank out of the equation.
Most of the corruption in Africa is
not governmental. There's a lot of capital flight. There's a lot of multinational corruption. There's a lot of World Bank corruption. I don't have any fast and easy answers. My basic approach to all problems is shine a light on it and get as much information out there as you can. And so my basic concept is create an open source hub and make it possible for every African to have a cell phone, have a mesh network, have free access to the Internet, and be able to get an answer to any question free online or over the phone. That's what I'd like to do in the next 10 to 15 years.
Okay. And the other question I have is, do you see a future for, if not the cryptocurrencies in the way they currently stand, but a market that people actually hold faith in more than a fiat currency? Or reverting back to gold or another standard that has concrete value or weight?
Gold. I don't see gold.
Well, just anything that we can put a, you know, something that you can hold, so to speak. Not something based on the belief in it. Or if it was based on the belief, something.
Given a choice between cryptocurrency and a handshake, I'd go with the handshake every time. Trust.
Do you believe it's being manipulated from the outside?
Oh, well, Bitcoin seems to have had a bank crash that was internally generated.
Well, they actually lost about 10%. What the Mt. Gox thing is, if that's what you're referring to, they lost about 10% of the actual whole market with the amount of Bitcoins they lost. And the effect on the market in the short term wasn't that big. The market actually stayed pretty level.
It's not something I'm very smart about, but I really am very nervous about anything where I will lose $1 million if I lose my flash drive.
So do you believe in another kind of currency that could almost prevail without government backing, so to speak?
Good faith between people.
Okay. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
I want to thank you for your service.
All right, I'm going to quit. I will go on strike. I will pack my shit and go to bed.
I want to remind you that Mt. Gox was Magic the Gathering Online Exchange, so you can't really put any credit to somebody that runs a PHP application for trading Magic the Gathering cards. I wanted to know your thoughts on what do you think about drawing back all of the problems in the Middle East to the creation and support?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you with all the conversation.
The creation and support of Israel and American support of Israel specifically.
Well, Israel was created based on a lie.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Let's elaborate.
Okay, the whole Balfour thing, the whole UK thing, I mean, that was all a put-up deal. Okay? And by the way, there were Palestinians there before the Jews got there. Gandhi's on record as saying that Palestine is to the Palestinians as France is to the French. Now, I'm all in favor of a two-state solution. I think Israel is running out of Jews, it's a real problem. What is being done in Palestine is genocide. The American funding of the Israeli government is unconscionable. We're paying 20 to 25% of the entire government budget, including $100 million for a mink-lined nuclear bunker in Tel Aviv. So I am certainly sorry if this upsets you, but I consider Israel a major cancer in the Middle East, along with Saudi Arabia.
All right. We're here at a hacking convention. There's one person that was here. One that can't, Aaron Schwartz and Weave.
I love Aaron Schwartz, who may have been murdered. Was he murdered? Do you guys think he was murdered?
They made HTTP requests. They didn't do anything illegal, and they got locked up. Well, you know what happened. What the fuck?
If I were running the FBI, Aaron Schwartz's murder would have been investigated properly.
But what about his charges to begin with? I mean, where does it end? If I am just looking, if I open Firebug, does that make me a legal hacker because I'm looking at if the website I'm using is illegal? If I use Wget, am I a hacker now? Where does it end?
I really recommend the book Stop Thief, because what is happening here is the criminalization of normal human behavior. And that's what has to be pushed back. It's not right to criminalize all of these things. So I think we're close to wrapping up. Does anyone have one final question? Yes. Yes, sir.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about...
No. They were telling me how many more minutes until 4 o'clock.
It doesn't matter. So...
4 hours and... No. Yeah. 4 o'clock, the hard stop.
So,
likely everybody here knows the story of Israel and how Israel came to exist, and the ideal behind what that is and what it represents to those people. What's your kind of opinion on what's happening in Iraq and parts of Syria and possibly Saudi Arabia with this whole ISIS thing? Because for me, what it is, and I don't have a religion, but it's kind of like the establishment of the Muslim state. So we have the Jewish state, now we're going to have the Muslim state, and they're going to have their own little thing going on, and whatever the fuck, whoever's there, they're going to get murdered if they don't pay the tax. But what do you think
well,
about
no,
that?
Well, no, it's not a Muslim thing. It's a Sunni Saudi Arabian incitement to riot thing.
And it's hard to to figure that out because it's not being played like that in the media here, right?
Hey, the media is we don't have media. We have a bunch of fucking clowns.
Well, forgive me, I mean, yeah, for listening.
Look.
But seriously, is that not a legitimate thing? Like, what's going on there as a reaction to the whole state of Israel and whatever, you know?
Well, now, that's a good point. But unfortunately, it's also a reaction to the fact that we've been screwing over the Kurds for a long time. It's a reaction to the fact that we've been screwing over Iran for a long time, that we were very stupid about how we basically tore down. I mean, if I were doing it, I would have negotiated with Saddam Hussein and Syria and Iran for a 5 to 10 year transition plan in which there would be a Sunni state and a Shiite state, and we would reunite the Shiites in Iraq with Iran, and we would have the Sunnis, and then the Kurds would have their own country. But we don't think in those terms. We basically broke Iraq, and we're now paying the price for breaking Iraq. And Syria, I mean, Syria is a Christian state in terms of its government. And people don't realize that. There's an awful lot of anti-Christian stuff going on that is not being reported in the media.
There's kind of like a lot of anti-everybody stuff going on, depending on what side of it you're looking at.
Well, the bottom line for me is that the U.S. government is uninformed and is making bad decisions for the wrong reasons.
Cool. Thank you.
Hello. So, like, your amount of, like, connections and the know-how, and, like, everyone knows the outward appearance of Bilderberg.
Of what?
Of the Bilderberg Conference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, in your passings in, like, the underground, per se, have you ever heard of, like, what actually goes on, or just speculation?
No, I mean, I saw a complete list of who was there, and I described it as people on the way down and wannabes thinking they're on the way up. I'm not that impressed. I'm much more concerned about the Council on Foreign Relations and Chatham House and Oxford scholarships, the round tables. Well, yeah, but you know, look, the bottom line here is that money controls everything. There's a great DVD. There's a wonderful DVD about the American ruling class. It's fun to watch. I mean, one of the problems we have is that there's too much inherited wealth right now. Look, these people are only getting away with it because we're not paying attention. Let's use the microphone. Yeah.
But as of late, we have been trying to focus attention towards that.
Please don't be disruptive. All right, I'm leaving.
Hold on. As of late, like, we
shut up, please?
We have been trying to pay attention towards them.
What?
And, like, we have been trying to pay more attention towards them, but every time we have, it's been, deflected. Like, it's been, like, they start deflecting it with the media, and then something completely...
Well, the media is of no help at all. I mean, the media doesn't do investigative journalism, and that's one of the... We're in a transition stage where the industrial era institutions have failed and the internet era institutions have not formed. And so that's why the open source hub has enormous potential, because that would create an ecology and infrastructure. So, all right, let's get your last two questions and then I think I'm going to stop.
Have you seen the movie The Good Shepherd? Matt Damon, 2006?
No.
All right,
I don't really watch CIA movies.
Okay. All right, so could you shine some light as to the day-to-day workings of what you would really be doing when you work for the CIA?
What's that?
Could you kind of like give us an inside peek into what you were doing when you worked for the CIA?
Well, the standard clandestine side.
Yeah, like a day-to-day thing, like, you know, a day in the life of a spy kind of.
The standard spy cycle is spotting, assessing, recruiting, handling, and then terminating, which means giving them enough money so that they don't go public. It doesn't mean killing them. So basically a standard day in the life of a CIA case officer is meeting agents that have already been recruited and developing potential new agents. Your average case officer will recruit one trader a year. I was doing five a year. You also do things like look for tradecraft sites where you can do dead drops or, you know, indirect communications. You spend a lot of time writing reports. I mean, for 1 hour of meeting, you've got 4 hours of typing. So you've got your expense report, your contact report, your intelligence reports. You have to get it all into the forms. You may do technical things like service a listening post or do something like that. If you're meeting with a terrorist, you have to tape record it and then type up what's called an I said, he said report, which is a real pain in the ass. You may occasionally use disguises or other kinds of things. I'm ignoring you, so please be quiet. No, I'm not interested. If you speak, I will leave.
Come on, dude.
I'm sorry on his
behalf. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. What it boils down to is in your average station, you have internal targets and you have external targets, like the Soviets and the Chinese and things like that. And you also have liaison duty sometimes where you'll meet with the local country's people. And by and large, it's kind of like being a diplomat with money. And I did my second graduate thesis on three embassy country teams, and what I found out was the State Department guys were outnumbered by all the other agencies that had to have their own representative, and the only people in a U.S. country team that can pay money for information are the spies, but they require that you be a traitor before they'll give you money. So there's no money for paying for commercial intelligence. There's no money for paying for legal investigative journalism. And so essentially, your average country team is limited to the physics of a 24-hour day and who is willing to be seen with them. Okay? And I came to the conclusion that your average embassy was collecting 20% of the relevant available information through all means, and then spilling 80% of that and going back to the United States. Because if you do a hard copy transfer through the pouch, you don't have to staff that. If you do an electronic message, you have to staff it. So the default was hard copy. Now, if you send hard copy back, it means it goes back to the original agency, who probably doesn't have time to process it, so they'll file it or throw it away. So you've spilled that information in the process of sending it back. Okay? Spy training is 6 months. It's kind of just like a New York policeman gets 6 months training. Spy gets 6 months training. Your real training comes in your first tour, in theory, when your chief of station is supposed to gradually put you in positions of increased risk and responsibility. And a huge part of the art of spying is knowing when a person is ready to take money. And that's usually not that hard. Most people are just afraid of popping the question, and so they'll put it off. And then after that, it's a question of trying to do operations without your people being known. But the reality is, because the U.S. likes to do spying from a fixed official installation, makes it very easy for foreign liaison to know exactly who all the spies are and who all their agents are. And so the reality is that most of our clandestine agents are probably controlled assets. And it's already a known fact that most of the clandestine intelligence that we report back to Washington is a gift from foreign liaison. We didn't actually steal it. Okay?
So follow-up to actually something that you mentioned, whereas you said that you had five times the amount of people that you were able to recruit than the other guys. Counting money aside and your ability to figure out, you know, who wants to get the money, what do you think would be the attributes or qualities that kind of enable you to achieve those kind of numbers?
Well, again, the psychological profile was changed for my class. I was one of the self-starters and entrepreneurial people. I actually cared. I mean, I had 15 developmentals at any one time. And if you want to take an average spy day, it includes 10 drinks and it's an 80-hour week. In fact, if I were training new spies, first off, I would never have them work out of official installations. I would hire them at mid-career, and I would only ask them to do 10% spying on the margins. And I would only hire people who have already established their access and their language skills and their cultural and historical knowledge. We hire kids from Kansas and send them out in Hawaiian shirts. it's insane. But I would also encourage them not to drink. Drinking makes you stupid. It took me a long time to learn that. So, again, spying should be a very small part of what we do. And one of the things I would do was I would create tactical analysis teams. I would have analysts in every embassy. And I would give the analysts money with which to buy open source information from private investigators and information brokers and commercial intelligence and so forth. And I'd actually try and make the embassy into a legal, ethical information hub. And I would try and foster information sharing with other countries and with the general managers of corporations and with the CEOs of or general managers of nonprofits like Transparency International and so forth. I mean, our whole approach to information today is bilateral, secretive, limited, and there's nothing in there about true cost economics either. Okay, let me try and clear this line, and then I'm going to stop. Okay. No, I think I want to stop at 4 o'clock. Okay, so 1 minute per person.
Hey there. Only got in here.
Thanks, Greg. No, I'm done. We're stopping.
Only came in here really recently, and in just the past 15 minutes, you broached tons of topics. So just to be participatory, I heard you mention eugenics earlier, just in a joke, but I was wondering what you thought about, like, state-sponsored eugenics programs, such as in China, for example.
State-sponsored what?
Eugenics programs.
I'm a total supporter. Just trying to see who's awake. Look, eugenics is murder. The best population control is education. Next question.
Going back to the spycraft aspect of this conversation, what did it feel like the first time you had to bug an area? And did you ever have any, like, close calls or oh shit moments?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first off, when you bug an area, usually you have an agent plant the device. And the hardest part is making sure the device is actually put in the right place. And then, of course, you have to have a listening post. As far as being in a tight spot, yeah, I got caught once in a tight spot. I was terrified. I got out of it.
Can I ask?
No.
Okay.
Next question.
I want to say thank you for your service. So you just said that you think that education is important. What do you think about when religion is essentially phased out? Do you think the world would be a better place without religion?
Well, I think someone left this. Faith is important. and ethics are important. And the golden rule is common to all religions. Something is needed to keep people together.
I
don't think religions are going to be phased out in our lifetime.
There's a difference between morality and religion. And,
yes.
I think that most of the wars in the past 100 years, at least, have been traced back to religious belief.
Or financial motivations.
Or cultural indifference.
Yeah.
But that culture is usually based deeply in religion. What can we do to make the Christian right, I guess, the people with the bombs, stop killing people because they don't understand that they believe in a different God?
Well, you know, when you ask that question, I'm reminded of this pastor who wanted to burn the Quran, who apparently was a CIA asset at some point. No, I don't. I really don't know. Look, I want to give this guy. Oh, no, that's it. I'm done.
No.
Good night.